Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the February 16th Board of Supervisors meeting. If you'd all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Please say with me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, any changes to the agenda?
We have an amended item to board business, which is B1, consideration of a report regarding the county's five-year capital improvement plan. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing attachment 1 to correct minor calculation errors in the subtotal lines. The replacement pages are attached for your approval. We have an added item to close session, which is pending litigation. Conference with legal counsel, existing litigation with Sierra Club versus County of San Luis Obispo et al., CV080059, Cayucas Fringe Viewshed case. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements.
Thank you. Before I open it up to public comment, I'm going to ask if we could please take a moment of silence. Mr. Alvey passed away, and I have to say, I didn't know the gentleman that well, but I read his obituary and spoke to his service as a police officer and his dedication to his community. He often came to the board and spoke his mind, and he did it very gently, but he made some very compelling remarks. So I would ask that we just take a moment of silence and have him in our thoughts as well as his family, please. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to open this up for public comment. I have a number of requests to speak. I'll start with Gwen Taylor, followed by Eric Greening, please. Okay, let's do Eric Greening and then Gwen Taylor.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Eric Greening, and I'd like to thank you for recognizing a very solid and thoughtful citizen. I think he's here with us, and he is all encouraging us all to continue speaking truth to power and exercising our citizenship. I would like to thank you as chair for an exemplary handling of the conservation and open space element process. The deliberate pace, the careful attention, the openness to the public comment, chapter by chapter, policy by policy, all of this will pay off in the excellence of the document when we're completed. And yes, it takes more time than cranking out a rush job, but I think quality is better than haste. And so I very much appreciate the job you're doing.
Thank you.
We had a number of comments at last week's hearing from people from publicly owned sewage treatment works raising some concerns, and I'd like to just cast some reassurance over those concerns so that staff isn't running around in circles worrying about how to respond to this. They probably already know. But the prohibition proposed for open space lands is in no way inconsistent with either the current interim ordinance or what is being talked about for the permanent ordinance, because in any event, it was only intended to be applied at agronomic rates to agricultural lands. If there's to be land application in this county, if it's to be something other than alternative daily cover on a landfill, that is what it would be. Open space has never been considered as a destination for this by county policy. It may be in other counties, I don't know, but there is no reason to conclude that banning its application to open space will end up mandating the export of the sludge from this county. As a matter of fact, if we were to be permissive with open space, we would probably have to go back and do more work on the EIR. The primary purposes of open space are habitat, natural habitat, and public recreation. And to the extent that the application could affect natural habitat and its values, obviously work would need to be done on the biological resources part of the EIR. To the extent that if it affects the recreating public, work would have to be done relative to hazardous materials. So it's simpler and consistent with county policy to simply keep the recommendation as it is. And again, I'd like to thank you for your orderly process moving through the document.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Ms. Taylor, followed by Mr. Broadwater, please.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos and the Prohibition Zone. Saltwater intrusion is on the minds of many people in the Los Osos area. Actions are urgently needed to prevent further seawater intrusion in the Los Osos water basin. After the presentation last month of the letter from Senator Maldonado that it is the jurisdiction of this county to address the saltwater intrusion in the Los Osos water basin, there has not been any agendized item for seawater intrusion for the RAC. The public asked that the seawater intrusion be agendized on the RAC's next meeting. The public was discouraged in making this request, yet the purpose of the RAC is to advise the board concerning water resources in this county. For the past 3 months, the Paso Robles groundwater basin has been agendized on the RAC. It is past time that the board asked the chair of the RAC to agendize saltwater intrusion in the Los Osos water basin before it increases any further. There have already been reports that it is advancing faster than originally thought. Please ask the RAC chairman to agendize this. In follow-up with Mr. Meacham's asking for a moment of silence, I would like to say that the community of Los Osos has lost Chris Albee, strong supporter of justice for all. 1019 was his CDO from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, yet this never deterred him from asking justice for all, even though he felt this order was unjust. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Broadwater, followed by Mr. Barrow.
Good morning. My name is David Broadwater. I'd like to direct your attention to you should have received two pieces of paper with two briefing papers from me this morning. This is two briefing papers that I have sent to you, one dated in January and one this month. I will be submitting to you before the March 23rd hearing on the open space chapter a third two-page brief, and that will be the final one on this subject. The first brief gives you basically some background and language from the permanent ordinance that Mr. Greening mentioned regarding sewage sludge land application and shows how the ordinances that have been proposed over the last 6 years by the Environmental Health Division don't allow land application on open space lands and also regulate composts with sewage sludge in it. The second briefing I'd like to spend a little bit more time on, and I hope you folks will bring these to the March 23rd hearing with you. I will be submitting them electronically as well. But you'll find on here the fact that when we get to discussing land application on agricultural lands, that will happen under the agriculture element, not the conservation and open space element that we're speaking about now. And that's laid out there. Plus, what's also included in this second briefing is this map of the county, color-coded, which shows you the amount of agriculturally zoned land in the county, which would be under the Environmental Health Division's proposed ordinances available for land application of sewage sludge. And we'll have that debate, as I said, when that ordinance comes forward under the ag element. But you can also see in blue the relatively small amount of land in the county which is actually open space land. So that gives you an idea of the context in which this proposed prohibition of land application of sewage sludge on open space lands will be occurring. And then finally, in my final brief that I'll be sending you, I know you've been hearing from some members of the sewage plant managers in the county and the California Association of Sanitation Agencies from Sacramento on this, and I will be providing you with some information that should be useful to you in evaluating the veracity of the claims that are made by that those groups of people. So I hope you take the time to read these. They're very brief, probably the briefest stuff I've ever written on the subject. So please take the opportunity to make yourself familiar with the information. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell, followed by Mr. Blair.
Good morning. My name is Al Farrell, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. First on my agenda, I'd like to thank Supervisor Hill. He informed me this morning that the transitional housing project next to the Prada Road down there by Higuera is taking shape, and you're looking for a permit now to approve the building of a project that will house about 200 homeless people or something like that. So that's really a bright spot in my day today, and I want to thank you very much for you and your coalition to work on moving forward with that. Thank you. The second thing I would like to say is I'd like to follow up David Broadwater's statement about biosolids, and that is that the county has an opportunity in Los Osos to create a biosolid-free project. ONS, step collection, will give you no biosolids for up to 60 years. Some of these ponds have gone over that length of time without having to have solids removed. And when they are removed, they're simply ash, which is a totally different product. So that's an opportunity that we want to see the county look at. And because the county has been reluctant in doing that and has chosen a preferred project that will require trucking and biosolids, we have formed an office, which a legal office, which is dedicated to the furtherance of an affordable and a more protective project. We know that it's one of the projects that was looked at in the EIR, so it's not something new. So we are going to fight with everything we can to get the most protective project for our community and for our environment. Protective in the sense that if we know that the EIR told us, number one, that we are in a situation out there, if we put in a gravity sewer, the pipes will move, the joints will become loose, and there will be leakage of raw sewage into our drinking water aquifer, which is becoming smaller and smaller as seawater intrusion comes in, and we depend more on the upper aquifer for our drinking water. And 1,200 acre feet is supposed to be transferred from the pumping of the lower to the upper aquifer at some point in time. So I just wanted everybody to know that don't give up. We're trying really hard to get the best project that we can, and we're going to use every tool available to us. And thank you for listening.
Thank you,
Mr. Blair. Enjoy the great weather.
Mr. Blair, followed by Piper Riley, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Blair, Aurora Grande. I'm going to talk to you a little bit this morning about transportation. Since I retired in 2000, I've put a lot of stamps in my passport. Recent trip to Europe, I counted American cars. 2 weeks over there, I counted 14. When you take the next trip, count foreign cars from Europe only. Stop it when you get to 20. This morning, coming in from Aurora Grande to about Shell Beach, I counted 20. What we are building in the United States is not acceptable in the rest of the world. They do not use the same fuels we use. They don't use the same power plants we use. They do not buy our automobiles. There are no Cadillacs in Europe unless they have diplomatic plates. I challenge you to find one over there when you travel. Cadillac is building a diesel version for the Asian market and the European market. Our EPA will keep it from coming to the United States. My car company, Mercedes-Benz, is a world leader. They are building fuel cell cars, diesel electric hybrids, but not much on gasoline hybrids because they're not efficient. We need to do what the Europeans are doing. The Europeans are going like this. The Americans are going like that. The American car companies are in the toilet because not because of bad management or bad workers, but because they're building a product that is not acceptable in the rest of the world. We also, in Spain, rode the bullet trains. You people are talking a lot now about the bullet trains. Bullet trains run on electricity. They do not run on diesel fuel. They do not run like American trains. Every train almost in Europe is electric. So if you are going to kill Diablo Canyon, you better figure out where the electricity is going to come from to run these trains. These trains are the most efficient, wonderful things you've ever seen. 200 miles an hour on a bullet train in Spain is like sitting behind that podium. It doesn't move, it doesn't shake, it doesn't rattle. We rode the snow train last week up in Sacramento. At 30 miles an hour, you can hardly stand up in an Amtrak train. And when it goes around a bend, you better hang on to something because you're going to hit the seat or hit the floor. Our technology is not keeping up with the rest of the world because we are putting restrictions that just don't make sense. And if you want to get out of your economic crisis, you better drill for oil. That thing out there that you want for solar panels is going to create 10 jobs, long-term jobs. If you drill for oil, they say it's going to create 168,000 jobs. And it's going to create enough revenue to run your schools, run this thing, and run your pension funds. No oil, no money. Thank you very much.
Ms. Riley, followed by Lindy Owen, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Board. I'm Piper Riley from Los Osos. My primary reason for coming before this board in the past has been to save my home and the local environment from being lost to a giant conventional corporate, Montgomery Watson Harza Sewer. Three stressful years of my life have been spent bringing this board and others facts on green, affordable technologies that will save our water supply and community while pointing out the sweetheart backroom deals being made only to be told that we are whiners, obstructionists, and should trust the system. 3 years and $7 million to get back to square one. And why? Because it is all a lie, a giant corporate lie that some of you have happily joined in on. After I spoke at the Coastal Commission hearings about the Tri-W site being the central sewage collection point and chemical mixing station, Supervisor Gibson got up and said, oh no, it's just a small little pump station. I asked Mr. Gibson about this, and one of two things are true. Either Supervisor Gibson is grossly and inadequately informed about this project, which at this juncture is not acceptable, or he is a liar. And since it's on video, I'll let others decide. Either way, he should not be representing us in Washington. And Chairman McMeacham, you are new to this, and I understand that you may not completely understand the full story. Your recent comment that the only reason that the last project was stopped was due to location is unfortunate. Gravity collection has always been an issue. The original Tri-W site was community approved because it was supposed to be used for passive ponds. But then Montgomery Watson Harza came into town and the project morphed into a 40-foot high industrial complex with an outrageous price tag. The Los Osos story has been going on for a long time because none of it makes sense. The prohibition zone was never based on science. The county and the water board haven't done their proper job for decades, and now the poor segment of the population are supposed to pay for cleaning up the mess, resulting in infrastructure being built on our backs so that rich developers can eat their cake. Attorney Marshall Ohilski, president of RCSD, represents a developer who is working on a Spanish-style villa within the prohibition zone on lot sizes similar to my own, which are closer to the bay and the groundwater supply, and they will be sewer exempt. None of this makes sense, but neither does the county insisting on sole sourcing, especially with a company like Montgomery Watson Harza, who have not only been stopped for their shady business dealings in Florida, they are also being implicated in misdealings in New Orleans. The stress from this insanity has taken a toll on many of us, and stress is a major contributing factor to deterioration of health. Last week, we lost Chris. Thank you for mentioning that. We will miss him greatly for his deep sense of right and wrong, his caring, and his wit. He was a 20-year LAPD officer, a 20-year community advocate, had the outsides of John Wayne and the insides of Dalai Lama. Several friends could not be here today, Bo and Lacey Cooper, Leon and Martha Golden, Beverly and Bill Moyland. I know they share my sentiments. For the record, I submit a letter on the Moylands' behalf. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, please, followed by Ben DeFata. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I, too, would like to thank you for the remembrance of Chris Allaby. CDO number 1019 with tall, gentleman with his straw hat and feathers. He was dedicated to the pursuit of justice and the battle for a good sewer solution, as well as many other issues in the community that he fought for good outcomes on. I wanted to talk briefly about the sludge issue on open space. There is no reason that we cannot look at 21st century technology, which would take that sludge product that I don't believe needs to be shipped outside of our county, but we need to not put it on land and soils that we care about. It needs to be considered as a fuel to generate electricity and power, and the sooner we begin thinking outside of the box, the sooner we're going to stop polluting our soils with very toxic material. The worms next to the study zones of this sludge application areas are mutated, and they're not even healthy when they're even close to it. So I totally hope that you will look at sludge as a toxic waste material that does not belong on any kind of soils. And then I wanted to present this to Chairman Meacham. This is a little dredged up, a little history from the past. This is from the National Water Research Institute, who are the same group that did the study. This is George Shabaniglis is the head of it, and he wrote the book on wastewater treatment in the United States of America. And anyway, this is the final report on the Dana-Ripley plan to do the alternative step system. And I doubt that you've seen this. This was prior to the one that the county and Pavo came up with, which, again, people that were attending said that it just reeked of being leaning towards gravity approval. So I want you to take a look at it. I've highlighted areas of it. There's no reason that steps shouldn't have been looked at 3 years ago, and that's what we're asking, is to go back and make this right. It's not going to get right until it gets looked at the way it should have been originally looked at. And it's up to all five of you to do this. I know that you can. And I wanted to ask Adam Hill last, what's happening in your district, in Oceano and all the beach areas, Pismo, Shell Beach? The pollution, I understand that there are DNA studies to try to begin to understand where the pollution is coming from. Being done by Dr. Kitts, who did the same DNA study supposedly in Los Osos, Morro Bay area. I wonder when we're going to hear something about the results of that. And from what we'd also like to know, who's doing the sewer upgrades in your district? Is it Carollo, Wallace, the same old people? Because obviously you have a major problem. I think we all know that where that pollution in the ocean is coming
Thank you,
from.
Ms.
Thank
Moore.
You.
Thank you very much. Mr. DeFatta, please, and my last request to speak, Nina Gabrielle.
Good morning, Supervisor. Ben DeFatta here. So. Like a thief in the night, our fallen warrior, Chris Alibi, CDO number 1019, was taken from us too soon. Any time I and others stood before you telling what you are doing and what Roger Briggs from the Water Board did by issuing CDOs to the 45 or so property owners in the zone was causing much anguish, suffering, pain, distress, and yes, even death to already at least a dozen in the zone in recent times. All this just to put fear to all those in the zone so as to sway an election like in the last case, the 218 sewer assessment on people's property. Remember, you, the county, are the ones that let out over 1,100 building permits to cause a lot of these problems. You all in government have no right to cause all these hardships to our citizens who have worked hard all their lives and just want to enjoy the fruits of their many years of labor in some kind of peace. Look around this country, this state, this county. The people are concerned that all of the above is on the verge of a depression. 1 in 5 homes are in foreclosure. No interest is being made on their investments. Their nest egg that they thought would be there when the end comes is being deteriorated rapidly. Gentlemen, this is not a game anymore. You are playing with people's lives here. Yet, you still want to go down Mr. Gibson and Mr. Oakland's expensive, unaffordable, antiquated brown gravity component path. The most expensive brown kind of sewer to build these days. Neither of them have ever built a sewer system before. You have made changes to the project and site, but for some reason, because you too, the Montgomery Watson Hart of Gravity Sewer, will never change as long as you are in office. These days, there is proven newer technologies that is affordable, green, sustainable. But for some reason, and many people know what that reason is, you who never built a sewer plant before insist on ruining the lives of several thousand property owners. We want a sewer project, but it has to match, is it too much to ask that it be affordable? Go ahead, keep on your present course. Mr. CDO 1019 will be the rallying cry to throw you all out of office. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeBata, I think. Ms. Grabiel and Richard Margeson. I'm sorry, I didn't see that one down below.
Hi, Nina Grabiel Oceano. First of all, I wanted to let you know, Director Meacham, that I truly believe that you are probably the only person sitting on that whole bench there who really has the public's interest at heart. I've been watching these meetings from home for several years now, and you can see the pattern, guys. You guys have exposed yourselves way too much. Also, as far as the county website is concerned, I went on there yesterday to find out about what was going on with the meeting today, check out the agenda, and I noticed that Adam Hill and Katra Sajians, there's a page that has a list of all the different directors, and all the other directors except those two have links underneath their names, and you press on that link, and they have a little statement about how they want to serve the public with a map of the district, and that's missing with Mr. Hill and Sajian, and I was just wondering why. It seems to me that the amount of money that this county is taking from the people, there should be enough money to have those two extra pages so we have an actual map of the districts. I also want to present a DVD to everyone here. Let me just pass them out here real quick. It's a film called America, Freedom to Fascism, and I want to encourage everyone who's received a copy to watch that film. It speaks on basically the financial fraud that's been perpetrated against this country for a long time now, and I think if people want to turn this country around, then we need to be aware of what's going on from the beginning, because the story has been going on a long time, and it's just been, brewing and growing and growing, and it's gone to the point now where this country is at a crossroads. It's either going to continue to be the beacon of freedom for the world in the form of a republic, or it's going to disappear and become something else. And I think if we're going to do that, then we need to have the input of the American people, because it's our country. It's not the president's country. It's not Congress's country. It's not the state of California's legislature's country. It's not your country. It's our country. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. My last request to speak, Mr. Margeson, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Richard Margeson, friend of CDO holder 1019. Thank you, Mr. Meacham, for your recognition of Chris this morning. Besides being a devoted father, husband, son, brother, friend, Chris was also devoted to his beliefs. Chris believed in and fought for Move the Sewer in Los Osos. He fought against the Water Board when he believed that they were attempting to usurp his property rights. Chris worked for the first recall election in Los Osos. Chris worked to defeat the first fire tax in Los Osos. He fought to pass the second fire tax in Los Osos that led to a better level of service for his fellow Los Osians. Chris fought against the dissolution of the CSD after the recall, when members of his community contacted the Water Board and asked them to find Los Osos out of existence. Chris was devoted to his friends, and he had your back if he was your friend. We could always call Chris if we needed to fill a room, to get behind a project, to advocate for a position. Even if it wasn't necessarily the position that he was advocating for at the moment, if you could convince him, Chris was there for you. Chris was also the first person I called, the only person I called, when we needed a cook for the Needs and Wishes fundraiser, because Chris was also a great cook. No, he didn't hesitate one bit, and he was our cook for the first 3 years. Because of his illness, he was not able to participate this year, and we will miss him for that. But he stood there out on the side of the community center, sometimes out in the cold, for 8-9 hours all 3 years, and made sure hamburgers and hot dogs were continually coming into the building to feed those there for the event. Chris stood for something, and I think if we could all be remembered when we pass on for standing for something, I think it'd be a better world. Chris will always be remembered for what he stood for in Los Osos. Thank you, and thank you for your remembrance.
Thank you, Mr. Morganson. I do have one letter that was submitted that was for a request for public comment for the board's meeting today. And this is from William Moylan and Beverly DeWitt Moylan from Los Osos. Gentlemen, we were unable to be in attendance at the 2/16/10 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting to participate in the public comment period, so we are submitting these remarks in writing. Today we are on our way to Santa Barbara, where we will receive regular and ongoing somatic psychotherapy treatments for the symptoms we both suffer related to the random enforcement action of the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board took against us in 2006 in the form of CDO R3-2006-1041. We continue to experience significant physical and psychological distress as the enforcement by the CCRWQCB has not abated and is in contingent on outcomes beyond our control. Such is the stress of living with random enforcement by a state regulatory agency and without the modicum of support from those agents elected locally and statewide to look after our best interests. We've been unable to rely on the CCR, Regional Water Quality Board, to provide us with the compliance assistance that their water code requires. We've been unable to rely on the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors for the most cursory gesture of support in the face of the gargantuan power of that board to harass us and threaten to take our homes through fines and condemnation. We have been unable to rely on the District 2 supervisor to do any more than apologize to the Regional Water Quality Board for the embarrassing problems we have caused them. As CDO R3-2006-1019, Chris and Elizabeth Alvey have walked this same road. They, too, refuse to allow themselves to be exploited in the service of political expediency and corruption. They, too, have spoken out repeatedly against this disgraceful scandal perpetrated by the Regional Water Quality Board against private citizens. Chris Alvey traveled far and wide, appearing week after week, month after month, and year after year before every appropriate public forum in his dedication to keeping government honest and accessible. He faced agencies, and public bodies who responded to his remarks about wastewater treatment and water board enforcement with amusement, boredom, and hostility, and who demeaned his participation in public process. Chris remained undaunted and true to his mission of holding public officials accountable for their decisions, their actions, and their failure to act. He spoke for those who could not or would not speak for themselves. Chris Alvey showed up. Chris Alvey spoke up. His unique, courageous voice is now still, but his dedication to demanding integrity and intelligence in our public officials and his expectation of a higher level of service from our elected and appointed bodies live on in those he has inspired to show up and speak up. Thank you for all your comments today, and I know that you will be remembering Chris and your thoughts and his family as well. With that, we're going to move into board business. Madam Clerk.
Item is A1, fiscal year 2010-2011 county budget update.
Thank you. Mr. Grant.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jim Grant, county administrator. Today we have a strategic planning day for you. That means we're bringing forward four items for your discussion today, your feedback, and just for providing you information. The four items will include the county budget update, and as you're aware, we're now working on next fiscal year that starts July 1. Departments have submitted their budgets recently, so we're just in the beginning of stages of analyzing the submittals and crafting a recommended budget for your board. As you might imagine, based on everything that we've gone through the last couple of years, next year is going to be another rough year for you, and you're going to have to make some very tough decisions. We are basically in the third year of what we call the five-year pain plan, and again, there's a budget gap of nearly $20 million that we'll get into the details in just a moment. We'll also provide you a state budget update that also looks rather grim. So in terms of budget today, it's going to be a fairly grim day. We have three other items, one by General Services Agency regarding the five-year capital plan that they monitor and they work. This includes construction of buildings and renovations and remodeling of existing buildings. It's going to be an overview of the current status of the plan, a listing of the projects that are planned to be developed within that five-year period, and then the funding challenges that this plan brings with it. Right after that, we'll have Public Works staff talk about their capital improvement plan. Their plan works and includes the roads, bridges, water, wastewater, and flood control projects. And again, it's going to take a look at the current status of the plan, what's out there right now, and a listing of the projects that are planned to be developed within the five-year time period, and again, funding challenges that go along with that. And then last, to sort of tie all this together, we're going to have a discussion from Planning and Public Works regarding the long-range infrastructure planning. This is something that the board's very interested in, and the staff is going to discuss how we're going to look out 30 years, basically, at the unincorporated areas and how those areas will grow and new facilities will be provided over the next 30 years. So we're going to take a look at that, and they're going to provide some strategies in terms of how to pay for those needed infrastructures. So with that, we're going to start with the budget update, and Dan Buckshot will be giving that. Thank you.
Okay, it sounds to be a depressing day, but it's beautiful outside, don't you think? I mean, there's got to be something to smile about.
We need some money out of this.
Mr. Buckshot. Hey, good morning. Dan Buckshot from the Administrative Office. As you can see here, the outline of what I'm going to review today, the first four items are related to the county budget, our specific circumstances, and then the fifth item there is related to the state budget. After I go through the first four, have some time for questions. I'm going to be asking the questions throughout, and then we'll dive into the state piece after that. So we'll jump right into it, how things are looking. As of October 09, the last budget update at a strategic planning session, we were forecasting a $24 million gap for the general fund. Since that time, deliberate actions have been taken to lower that gap. As you can see here, the pension rate increase, which was initially looking to be about 4%, was reduced to about 1%. Now, it's still an increase, it's just a lesser increase. That reduced the cost by $4 million. The other post-employment benefit charges have been reduced by about 30%. These are essentially retiree health care costs. That's related to the work by the Auditor Controller's Office to set up a trust fund to better manage those funds for a greater return. Workers' comp charges have been reduced by about 50%, or $1.5 million, and this is due to the good work by all county departments in, number one, trying to avoid injuries, and two, if folks do get injured, to get them healthy as soon as possible. The Risk Management Division of Human Resources has had a key role in that as well, so thanks to everybody for their efforts. And then there are reduced internal service charges by about $2 million. This is for a couple reasons. One, we've shrank a bit as an organization, less work is required. And additionally, departments, primarily General Services Agency, the IT, the Information Technology Division, and Risk Management, the liability charges have been reduced considerably to help reduce the burden and charges to departments. The last figure is an adjustment to the forecast. Back when the October forecast was built, the SLOSIA prevailing wage, as we all know, SLOSIA deferred that for 09-10, but it was not waived. So at this point in time, it would still hit 10-11. That wasn't built into the forecast initially. So if we make that assumption that it would hit 10-11, it adds $5 million. All that being said, the updated forecast as of end of December, early January, was looking to be about $20.5 million, and
As Mr. Grant noted, departmental budgets were received about a week ago, and based upon that information and a high-level review, we're looking at about an $18.5 to $19.5 million gap. Maybe we pick the middle and call it $19 million. The reason we're still giving a bit of a range is we've only had about a week to review the information. There are still some questions, but we're pretty close to about $19 million. So the good news is the forecast was accurate. We're less than the forecast, which is good news. Bad news is we still have a $19 million budget gap to close, which will be challenging, no doubt. Additionally, there are requests for additional resources. The way the budget process works with departments are asked to submit essentially three submittals. One is what we call the status quo submittal, which means continue doing what we're doing and what that costs. That generally increases due to labor and CPI increases and in recent times decreases in revenue. We ask departments to submit a reductions list to a specified target to help close the gap. And then the third component is make the request for what departments feel they need in order to address unmet needs or demands. That totals about $3.5 million in total cost, of which about $2 million would come from the general fund in eight positions. No doubt we would not be able to afford to fund all of these requests. However, these will have to be looked at. There may be some that are related to public health safety or a legal mandate of some sort. To the extent that any of these are funded from the general fund, it adds to the $19 million gap. Focus on a slide that we've used for a while when we're talking about the gap for the upcoming year. We are focused only on the general fund. Assumes a status quo, which means the assumption is nothing is added for the remainder of the current year, nothing added in the budget year. And then the last point, it does not take into consideration any potential impacts from the state. If we do receive less money from the state, any types of cuts, the assumption is that we make the corresponding offset in expenditures, which is exactly what your board's done for the last couple of years. So rolling in a little more detail in terms of the methodology or approach for how the budget was built, we think we're near the bottom. For the first half of 2009-10, things were still dropping on a very steep rate, and things are starting to level out. We don't know if we've hit the bottom, bounced off a little bit, may flutter around for a while, but the projection for 10-11 is that we're going to hover near the bottom for the upcoming year. We're not projecting significant decreases in revenue for 10-11. Have built in a 4% contingency. Standard board policy is to have a 5% contingency. In 2009-10, it was reduced as one of the short-term measures. Over time, as things improve, hopefully in the out years, we'll be able to get back to a 5% contingency, but the starting point was 4%, and then as I noted, the state budget impacts are not included. There is a $20 billion gap that the state budget is currently facing, and I'll talk about that in more detail a little bit later. So in terms of, again, how to address this, departments were asked to put together reductions lists in order to help address this gap. Public safety was asked to cut the least, given that they're your board's highest priority or one of your board's highest priorities. They're asked basically to reduce back to current levels. They start at current year level of general fund support, create a status quo submittal that increases due to labor costs, CPI increases, and reduced revenue, and they're asked to pare that back to where they are in 2009-10. See health agency and roads minus 10% and minus 25% respectively from current year, and everybody else minus 5%. And I do want to reiterate a point that I've said multiple times, and it's worth repeating again. Nobody's trying to pick on health agency and roads. Those are very important programs. It really comes down to how the funding is provided in the law of numbers, if you will. Currently, the health agency and roads, the county provides a considerable overmatch, if you will, beyond what the minimum requirements are. As an example, some counties don't provide any general fund to roads. We provide about $8.5 million. So that's where a significant amount of the general fund goes. And in order to tackle the gap, we're asking for more from those various agencies. Look at the impacts. As Mr. Grant noted, this is the third year, and as a result, the easier solutions have been implemented. I don't think any of us think that what's been done the last couple years is easy, but by comparison, it may be easier. That being said, we're looking at approximately 85 positions. If the reduction lists were implemented as is submitted by departments, which that may not be the case, there'll likely be some changes over the next few months, we'd be looking at 17 that would go away in the status quo budget alone. Even if we could fund a status quo budget, 17 positions would go away due to either reductions in demand or a loss in grant funding. and then the reductions this result in about 68 positions. Of that, 36 of the total 85, 36 are filled, and about 49 are vacant at this point in time. Just to reiterate, the easier solutions have been implemented. If you look at the 3 years, the impact to the workforce is significant. 08-09 was the first budget year. If we were to implement the reductions for 10-11, we're looking at a three-year cumulative impact of 10.5%, or about 260 positions. So in terms of capacity of what the organization can deliver, it is certainly being pared back during this time frame. Taking a look over the 10-year time frame, you can see we hit a peak in 02-03 of about 2,700 positions. The drop in 02-03, 03-04 was related to the closure of General Hospital and the change to the clinic system. And then starting 04-05 through the boom time, 07-08, we added about 100 positions. And then you can see the drop on the right-hand side, which mirrors our revenue projections more or less. We've seen this trend is all too familiar. So building on the outlook into the future, this is a chart that we've looked at for some time. As we've discussed, one of your board's key strategies in balancing the budget is using some short-term measures to help soften the impact of reductions, but still make some cuts and some reductions in order to address the structural gap that exists. And the idea is to pare back the amount of short-term funding that's used in any given year. You can see 08-09, it was a 50-50 split between short-term and long-term. 09-10 was one-third, two-third. 10-11, we're looking at using somewhere, and this is early, obviously this may change, between a quarter and a third of short-time solutions. 11-12, about 20% use short-term. And then, hopefully, this was built back in 08-09. We'd be looking by 12-13 being in what's been coined the new normal, where we see some growth in revenues, relatively slow, but we're in structural balance. But frankly, I think that's a bit optimistic. We put this together in 08-09. I hope it holds true that 12-11 we're back in structural balance, but yeah, I think it could very easily be 13-14 or 14-15, but we'll see how things play out over the next year or two. Let's talk about the approach then to closing the gap and the various strategies your board has put in place and staff has deployed over the last few years. You can see here, let's start with the budget fundamentals, the four cornerstones of the budget. When I put this slide together in December for the department budget kickoff meeting where we rolled through the detailed instructions, I was thinking of something much more regal along the lines of big marble pillars along the lines of the Parthenon, but I thought that giving current budget a simple wooden stool might be more appropriate. So the four legs of our stool are the board's priorities, which we'll speak to in a moment, the budget goals and policies, which your board reviews every year and were recently adopted in November, the budget balancing strategies and approaches, which we'll run through in a few moments, and then the detailed budget instructions, which provides key policy as well as more mechanical instructions to departments for how to create the budget. Quick review, your board's highest priorities are to meet legal mandates so that we are in compliance with the law. The second highest priority is to keep our creditors whole so that we have the option to borrow money in the future. And then the third highest priority are the four departments that you see here that have been determined to be public safety, and as a result are the top three priorities as you can see here on this slide. In terms of looking at the budget balancing approaches, again, want to take a multi-year approach. Don't want to make all the cuts in 1 year, which would result in draconian cuts to programs and services. Flip side, we don't want to kick the can down the road and just use short-term options, which is primarily what the state's done for the last few years. We do want to be responsible and tackle the gap so that we get to a point of balance over the next couple years. With respect to the long-term approaches, in the multi-year approach, and these do help address the structural gap. We've had these in place for a couple years. We will continue to use those. Obviously, we'll take a priority-driven approach. The higher priorities would be cut less. Lower priorities would likely be cut more. That being said, all the departments need to participate. Nobody's exempt. Your board has determined that everybody needs to help solve the challenges that we face. We look at proportional reductions. Over time, during the boom years, some departments saw a big spike in demand, a big spike in revenues, and as a result, resources were added significantly. Now, in some cases, the revenues have dropped significantly, demands dropped significantly, and we're paling back the resources. Not trying to pick on planning and building, but they are a good example of this. During the boom time, revenues were flowing, demand was high, not just here in our county, it was statewide, countrywide for that matter. Now the bottom's dropped out of the market, and the revenues have dropped as well as demand for services. Implement mid-year reductions as necessary, reduce the overmatch that I spoke to, and then given that employee and labor costs account for over two-thirds of the county budget, employees and employee associations have a critical role in helping address the budget gap. Some short-term approaches. This is more or less a menu of options that can be utilized to help help soften the impacts in the short term. Hiring freeze has been in place for 2.5 years. Every request to hire goes personally to the CAO for review, and he determines if they can be filled or not, depending upon the critical nature. Hiring chill is probably more appropriate than a hiring freeze. We reduced the general fund contingency from 5% to 4%. Deferred capital and maintenance expenditures where possible. We'll continue to do that. Obviously, we want that to careful balance point. We do not want our facilities to deteriorate to the point where they're either unusable or cost a ridiculous amount to rehab in the future. We've reallocated accumulated depreciation that should be set aside for automation projects as well as for building replacement. We're still setting some aside, but not as much. It's been redirected to the operating budget. Voluntary time off has been used, and departments are using that again in the 10-11 submittals. Try to maximize federal stimulus funding to the extent that we can. About a year ago, an early retirement plan was offered, or option was offered to employees. Has not been decided if that will be used for 10-11 yet. That's something that will be discussed with your board in the coming weeks. And then, of course, we'll use some of the one-time reserves to help soften the budget impacts. So rolling through, I want to touch on a couple slides that we reviewed in October, and I think it's important to rehash again because it outlines the challenge that we find ourselves heading into the third year of difficult budgets. The basic framework for how departmental budgets work: there's departmental revenue, there's department expense. In almost all cases, the expenses do not cover the revenue. The difference is funded by the general fund, which is funded by these three mechanisms. It's non-departmental revenue, which is primarily property tax, sales tax, transient occupancy tax. It's also funded by fund balance available, which is the money that's left over at the end of 1 year for use in the next. And then from that, general fund contingency is deducted, as that's carved out of that discretionary piece. In total, the amount of general fund support available is about $150 million in round figures. So taking a look at where we were in 2007-08, as you can see here, public safety comprised 36% of that $150 million. You can see health agency, roads, social services, or other pieces of the pie. And all the other departments comprised 39% of the total. So 7 of the 22 departments comprised 39%, I'm sorry, 7% of the 27 departments of the 22 comprised 61%. Of the overall cost in 07-08. In 09-10, that number has increased. You can see public safety increased from 36% of the overall pie to 44%. So those seven departments now comprise 68% of the total. So the challenge is we can't just balance the budget on the backs of the 32%. All the different pieces need to participate in addressing the gap. And there's no doubt that there are some significant challenges with respect to public safety as well as some of the other departments that we'll discuss in greater detail over the coming weeks and months as we look to bring the budget into balance. And briefly touch on the actions that your board and prior boards have taken over the past couple years. There's been a lot of work that has been done. It was about 3 years ago, almost to the day, that the current challenges were first identified. Shortly thereafter, hiring freeze was implemented. The $18 million gap was closed during the 08-09 budget hearings. Mid-year reductions were implemented to offset any prevailing wage increases, and we were impacted by the state in the mid-08-09 budget year to the tune of about $2 million. That was scaled back. The board established priorities and created and implemented budget balancing strategies, closed a $30 million gap in the current year, and again implemented mid-year reductions. Directed staff to implement a Tier 2 pension and to split costs for existing pension costs and existing programs that is currently being evaluated. more info will be brought to your board in the coming weeks. This past November, the state was looking to take redirect $10 million of property taxes from counties, from our county and from all counties and cities statewide. Securitization program was put into place, considerable amount of work to make that happen to avoid that $10 million loss. Health and Human Services was reduced by about $3 million due to state revenue takeaways. And then just about a month ago, some state revenues are falling significantly short of budgeted amounts, and public safety budgets were reduced by $2.5 million. And similar presentations in the past, I do search far and wide for any good news I can bring your board, and the best I can come up with is that we are better off than most. Although this has been difficult, I can take comfort that most of our peers are in a much more difficult situation. An example of that, you can see property taxes. This is based upon the assessment roll that was completed in July of this year. We saw about a 0.5% reduction. Statewide, California average was 2.5%, and you can see the significant impact some of the valley counties where there was big growth and now a big drop, anywhere from a 10 to 13.5% drop in property tax. Those counties have just been devastated. Significant layoffs, significant cuts to programs and services. So while we do have difficult decisions to make, not as difficult as what others are facing. Additionally, we've been a bit sheltered compared to the rest of California in terms of our employment base. We're more in line with national unemployment averages as opposed to the California average, which is higher. We have had the cost relief that I mentioned earlier. Departments have done a nice job. Internal service charges are down. Workers' comp charges are down. Retiree health care costs are being driven down. So that's good news. Obviously, more work to be done to drive down internal costs, but departments have made some nice progress over the past couple of years. Looking forward, what does it look like over the next couple of years and couple months, couple of years? We are seeing some improvement in the revenue piece, very minor. As I mentioned, it's more a matter of hitting the bottom. The stark decline is not as stark as what it's been. But we're not out of the woods yet. As long as people are worried about their jobs, as long as unemployment remains high, consumers are likely to spend less, which prolongs the effects of the recession. And something a lot of economists, particularly Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, are watching closely and are concerned about is the potential double dip. Back in the Great Depression in 1929, there was the big drop in the stock market. There was about 2 years of significant downturn. Things improved for about a year, and then it dipped again and lasted for several years. Obviously, everybody wants to avoid that in the current situation, but nobody can say confidently that it won't happen. And there's no question that inflation will hit. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, given that the federal budget deficit is now at $1.5 trillion, and a significant amount of money has been printed. Inflation will hit. We just don't know to what extent and when. And then lastly, there are at least two more years of difficult budget years. I hope it's only two, but we'll have to wait and see. In terms of process, where we're at, we're on the lower left of this continuous cycle. Departments just submitted their budgets a week ago. We're working on reviewing that and working with the departments. It is an iterative process, and we'll have budget hearings in June. More specifically, we work with departments reviewing the information February and March, create our recommended budget in early April, and then it takes 3 weeks to a month to actually produce that monster document that we call the budget to write up all of the detailed information and the narrative information. We'll introduce it May 18th according to the schedule and hold budget hearings June 14th to the 16th. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Well, that's with the report, Mr. Buckshy. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As always, it's a remarkable amount of work that our departments and our admin department in particular does on this, and we owe them great thanks for sorting through this, especially in these difficult times. Mr. Buckshy, you started indicating we're near the bottom, and I wonder if you could elaborate just a little bit. I assume you're talking about our struggles with revenue coming into the county. You referenced briefly our property taxes, which is part of it. And so if you could expand just a little bit on what you see starting to level off, and also talk a little bit about whether we're near the bottom given the considerable uncertainties in the state situation, which very much directly affects our local revenue situation.
Yeah, certainly. One of the key areas, our biggest revenue source is property tax. In round figures, from the various sources, is about $100 million. The assessor's office, after looking at the data that's out there and working on the assessments, is seeing that in the under $600,000 range, he believes those home sales have likely reached bottom. And it seems like there's some strength that's starting to occur in the under $600,000 market. The above $600,000 is still pretty soft. The million-dollar homes are the softest part of the market at this point in time, so that's a continued concern. Commercial's still soft, but that being said, at least a significant portion of the market, the under $600,000, is stabilized, showing some signs of improvement. You may recall a year ago, Prop 8, which is when properties, the assessed value is lowered from their current value. We had 39,000 properties that were reduced. At this point in time, it's looking like they're holding steady, that there may not be further reductions, which is good news. So on the property tax front, that's the latest information. In terms of hotel tax, transient occupancy tax, sales tax especially, has been a steep decline. It's starting to flatten out in terms of the decline. It's not picking up yet, but the year-over-year and month-over-month decline has softened. So those are the key indicators that we're looking at. As you mentioned, the state is the big black cloud with how they're going to tackle the $20 billion gap, what it means for us specifically. It's early in the process. We just have generalities at this point, but certainly that could make things much worse. It's very unlikely to make things better. It's likely only to make things worse.
Thank you.
If I could just follow up real quickly on Supervisor Gibson's comments, and also relating to our property tax, we get about $100 million. Of that, though, with Prop 1A, they've taken, what, 8%?
Mm-hmm.
So that 8% we will be paid back at the end of 3 years with interest, and then they'll borrow it again. So we're going to be out that 8% of our property tax values for probably 6 years. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, what we did actually is the securitization program.
We went through the state program.
So we're whole for now, but I think the latter half is very accurate, that the state can borrow again in 3 years after this is repaid, and I think it's very likely everybody expects them to do so.
Can we just keep it and give them an IOU?
You could certainly try.
Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of observations, Mr. Buckshot. Going back to roads, when you a 25% reduction, have we figured out what will be the impact in the long run? Because obviously, if we're not taking care of our roads, later on it's going to be much more expensive to bring them up to specs or maintain them and things of that nature. That's one question. The other question, if I may, as well, property taxes. It always looks good if we compare our property taxes to those of the counties within the valley, but we're being more of a coastal county. Have we done in comparison with other coastal counties as what's happening to their property taxes, which I think will give us a better picture? I don't mind you trying us to look good, but thinking what would happen if we did a coastal comparison.
Yeah, let me tackle that last question first, if I may. We're relatively in line with the other coastal communities, a little bit better than some, a little bit worse than others. Santa Barbara, I think, dropped a bit more. Monterey dropped a bit more. The Bay Area has held up better than us. So we're pretty much in the mix with the coastal communities. You're right, it is the inland communities that have taken a harder hit. There's no doubt about it. Regarding roads, the preliminary information, I believe the current roads pavement management rating, which you're probably familiar with, is around a 65. The target is 70 or better that the roads department strives for. I believe, and Public Works can correct me if I'm wrong, this is a quick look, that if we were reduced by 25%, and if that 25% reduction were sustained for 10 years, the pavement management rating would drop to somewhere in the mid-50s. The idea is to start adding back to the roads pavement management when things get better a few years out so that we don't have that drop for 10 straight years. So hopefully in a few years things improve, we'll be able to put a little bit money back into roads, a little bit more money back into roads, and then that pavement management rating would then start to increase.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, and Dan, I wanted to follow up on Supervisor Sajjan's question about roads and clarifying how much if you have a sense that we have been overmatching. You pointed out that the two areas we're seeing the biggest reductions have to do with roads and health agencies, which are two areas where we've had the greatest amount of backfilling. Do we have a sense of how much we've been overmatching on roads? Because it is, I think some people don't understand that we have been putting a lot of general fund money while the state has been reducing their commitments.
Yeah, I believe in the current year 09-10, there was about $8.5 million of general fund put into roads, and that could generally all be considered overmatched.
And that has, we've seen that trend for quite a long
time. Just a couple years ago, we were putting in, I think, $10.5 or $11 million into roads, so we have pared it back the last couple years.
Yeah, I think it's important, Jim Grant, County Administrator, realize that the roads has been the recipient of stimulus funds and Prop 1B funds. So there's some outside funding that they're getting that they got this current year, actually, that even though they were cut in the general fund, it was made up through other sources. So we're hoping that could be the case for next year as well. That's not a given at this point in time, but we're thinking that if there's other monies available to make up the difference, that would work for us. But again, just to reiterate, the reason there's been significant money, general fund money, put into roads is that, one, we could afford to do that, and it does get the pavement management rating up there near 65% to 70%. And then in part of the philosophy is if you put a lot of money into that maintenance, just like you would maybe our maintaining our buildings, putting new roofs on, doing electric and plumbing, that once you've done that, it will maintain over the next couple of years. So even if you drop the general fund contribution, the roads won't deteriorate in the next few years that much. So you can get through, provide money for additional other services that we would be cutting, that you could, you know, it might be in public safety, it might be in any other place, that you could use that money to bolster those services while we went through the recovery. So that's sort of the philosophy behind our recommendation that we're making right at the moment.
And one other question, if I could, Mr. Chair. Dan, I wondered if you had some insight into how the commercial real estate market might affect our bottom line revenues. There's a lot of concern that this is the sort of next shoe to drop. Elizabeth Warren, who oversees the TARP, has written about her great concerns. Lenders and banks have been making it increasingly more difficult for commercial property owners to continue to hold on to their properties. I've talked to a few in our community, and they're concerned as well. A lot of commercial property owners are essentially in the position of having to look for offers for everything in the event that their loans get called in or the terms get changed, and that has been a greater national concern, and I wonder if we have a sense of how that could impact us.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, that's something that's on the radar to keep a close eye on. As far as the 10-11 property tax budget at this point in time or projection, some decline in the commercial real estate was included, so we'll be tracking that to see how that matches reality. And I believe the bigger piece in terms of the influence upon our local property taxes is residential. So even if it does drop, it wouldn't have as big of an impact as the residential drop did, but nonetheless, it could be significant. So it's a good point. It's being watched closely.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick comment regarding the approach that we've been taking to the economic downturn. As you pointed out, Mr. Buckshy, we began 3 years ago taking a look at what we need to do to compensate. And I, like my colleague Supervisor Gibson, want to thank the department heads and particularly admin for working closely with department heads and a very conservative and metered approach over the long term. We weren't looking at this as a 1 or 2 year problem, but as you mentioned, a 5 year problem, and it may even be longer than that. And obviously our county employees too have helped us tremendously the past couple of years in closing that budget gap, and they too deserve our thanks. When we began talking about how we're going to close these budget gaps, Dan, we took a look at our reserves, and we did have substantial reserves, fortunately. we've used some as a one-time infusion to help close the gaps, and I'm just curious to know, you didn't mention this morning on how we look currently with our reserves, and I know when you come back to us with your proposed budget in a couple of months, you'll have some recommendations on how to utilize our various reserves, but I'm just curious to know how we stand generally with our reserves and how they'll be applied this year for the 10-11 budget.
Yeah, if we could pull back up the PowerPoint and outline that. Looking at reserves, overall in round figure there is about $80 million in reserves. If you look at this, about $34 million can only be used for these specific activities. These cannot be directed to other activities. Second bundle here, if you will, about $43 million, technically could be redirected to other things, but they're primarily set aside or are reserved and plan to be spent on current programs. A couple examples I'll pick out of here. Women's jail, $6.5 million for the local match has been set aside. Fire equipment replacement. We need to replace fire trucks and equipment. There's a reserve set aside for that. Obviously, that could be redirected, but it means we wouldn't have money to replace fire equipment. Willow Road, $6 million has been set aside as a loan for that project. Theoretically, it could be redirected, but we're not planning to do so at that point in time.
Thank you. that topic's yet upcoming, I think, Supervisor.
We've got time to talk about that.
Yeah, right.
So again, theoretically this is available, but from a practical standpoint, it's really not available because it is planned for use, which leads us to the not restricted or not specified, which is about $6.5 million in total, the tax reduction reserve. And then there was money set up for post-employment health, but that's being funded differently, so that money is now freed up for general use. So we would look at potentially using a couple million of this to help balance the 10-11 budget for the short term. The exact mix, don't know at this point in time. We'll see how the numbers shake out over the next few weeks and months.
And this does not include our 4% contingency. That's not considered a reserve. That's more of an emergency fund, if you
that's,
will.
That's correct. Okay. That's part of the operating budget.
And that's approximately 15 to 16?
Yeah, about 14, I believe, yeah. 15.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one quick question, if I could, then I'll jump back to you guys again. But, Dan, you mentioned earlier it's not if but when we'll start recognizing inflation. I have a lot of confidence in your forecast and how you put together the analysis of our budget, and I think it's wonderful. So I was curious if you have any kind of expectation of when you might assume to start seeing the inflation level rise and at what point that might happen. Is it when the turnaround starts to begin that we'll start seeing that dramatic increase in inflation, and from your opinion?
That's a really good question, and I wish I had a really definitive answer for you, but I can't say that I do. I think there are a couple things that are at play that would do that. I think, yeah, generally speaking, as the economy starts to pick back up, inflation concerns will kick in. I think the other piece that will impact when the economy really does start to turn around is how long the federal stimulus is going to be implemented and utilized. You know, there's been discussions of creating another job stimulus program or potentially of another stimulus program. A couple key things that I think that will be happening here in the next couple months, the home buyer's credit. I think it's $8,000 for a first-time home buyer, $6,500 for anybody who's already owned a house. That ends, I believe, in April or March. That may soften the market and could prolong things. If that program's extended, it may help drive the housing market. And then additionally, the Fed has been pumping money into the banks to help keep interest rates low. As most everybody probably knows, the 30-year mortgage has been hovering around 5%, give or take, over the last better part of the past year. That program is scheduled to end in March, and many believe that interest rates may start picking up at that point. So that could have two effects. One, it could destroy the housing market that's moving forward if it stops and interest rates pick up, which means then the economy could slow down, may not have inflation. Conversely, maybe the market is stable enough where that can be scaled back, interest rates start to pick up, but things still continue to improve, and then maybe we see some inflation. But generally speaking, I would guess it's still at least a year to year or more out.
And I guess how would we hedge ourselves against inflation from the county budget standpoint?
Careful planning. I mean, I think the reality is inflation were to drive up, obviously expenditures are going to be increasing at a significant clip, and we'll try to forecast and plan for that as early in the process as possible. Flip side, revenue should be increasing if we're in inflationary stage as well.
One of the biggest concerns or complaints that I've heard out there from all the different industries is the inability to get money from the banks. The banks aren't lending. The banks' credit is so tight. Would there be some type of a mechanism by which the county could participate with banks for lending to get a higher interest rate on something that's well secured as opposed to a CD, for example?
I suppose anything's possible. I don't know that in terms of the scheme of the banking system and the size that the county would really be a big enough player to really impact that dynamic. I'm talking about a significant amount of money.
I guess I'm looking for anything that we can do to kind of stimulate this economy. Mr. Hill,
I know you have something for that, so.
It's in my wallet.
Borrow your credit card. Mr. Buckshy, back to reserves real quickly. As we've been drawing down on our reserves over this five-year plan, do we have a sense of when things start to even out again, of how we're going to build back reserves and how long a period? Obviously, that's a continual important part of our financial structure in the county.
Yeah, the balance point would be is that things start to improve, start adding back to programs and services.
Microphone's off, Dan.
Thanks.
Yeah, and one more question, if I could, on that. So do we have a ballpark figure on how much, as we've reduced that contingency fund, of how much in terms of real dollars that will be in the five-year period, as a sense of how much we'd have to, you know, go to get back to that 5%?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 5% to a 4% contingency is about $3 to $4 million, depending upon the year. So if we do that for 3 years, we're looking upwards of $12 million less that would have been available, and then we've drawn down about say about $4 million out of the other reserves. So we're approaching $15 to $20 million over that time frame.
Thank you. And just another quick follow-up on inflation, Dan. I'm sorry I didn't get this one thrown in there as well. Once we start recognizing the inflationary percentages start to come along, what impact are we going to see from the county standpoint with the rise in inflation? What will be the first sign of
it? I think a couple things. I think raw material prices would start to increase, probably impact the roads program significantly, the cost of asphalt, cost of oil. Cost of operating equipment, gasoline would be a big increase. And then I believe in the past when there was big inflation, labor prices started to increase. You know, employees
so the cost
are more
of projects are going to significantly rise.
I would guess so.
I can remember back in the 70s when interest rates were 18 to 20% at various levels. Okay, we're going to go to the public, and then we'll take a break after that. I have two requests to speak, Mr. Greening, followed by Nina Gabriel, please.
Thank you, and I am Eric Greening, and I hope we don't miss the state budget part, because a lot of what that, how that affects us is actually going to change the parameters of the discussion we're having on our county's budget. Anyway, I would also like to thank Mr. Buckshy for his very detailed work. I have a question relative to the disproportionate hit the health department budget is taking. And as you know, I've always felt that health should be considered a public safety budget. I know that there are definitions around there, but the common sense definition is that a department that saves lives should be considered public safety. That said, my specific question relative to the health agency budget is the 10% reduction simply a 10% of what we can control, or is it 10% of the whole package, which might have a disproportionate effect on what we can control? For example, health care for indigents, even though we don't have a general hospital, the taxpayers still get the bill for indigents who go to existing hospitals and can't be collected from. That's basically outside of our control. We can't decide to reduce that by 10% unless we're simply going to stop treating people, and I think that would not be legal. A corollary question is, in the event, and it wouldn't probably affect us this year, this coming budget year, but in the event that single payer passed, in other words, that it passed in California and was signed and was not preempted by something from Washington, how would that impact the resources required by the health department to provide, say, the current level of service? In other words, would that be a plus to us that would be significant enough that we need to be thinking about that in our legislative platform, both in Sacramento and in Washington? And then finally, relative to the road situation, as you know, I believe that we should be continuing to maintain the roads and that we should be working toward driver-related sources to do so, that actually we shouldn't be taking any money out of the general fund to keep up the roads. We should not be competing with other needs in the county to keep up the roads, whether it's gas taxes, vehicle license fee, or whatever appropriate sources. If we're serious about our climate action plan, we should not be diverting the general fund, we should not be diverting the TDA. The care of the roads should be something people think about. The cost of that care should be something people think about when they stick a key in an ignition and decide how to batch the trips or how many people they're bringing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Ms. Grabiel?
Hi.
Am I pronouncing that correctly? I'm sorry.
It's Grabiel.
Grabiel. Okay, good.
Yeah,
thank you.
Oceano. I was just wondering, the revenue report that we're just looking at, does that include revenues from investments that the county might have, or enterprise funds, or activities that the county is involved in? I mean, and is there anywhere where the public can see and have access to what would become maybe known as the comprehensive annual financial report that includes monies not just from taxes and fees that are collected, but also from investments and enterprises? Because I'd like to see a copy of that. I'd like to see a copy of the full budget, all the money that's coming in and all the places where it's going out. So who would I go to for that?
We're going
to
give you those answers here in just a moment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. No more requests to speak, but I have a couple questions out there. Does anyone, one of the departments from the health department, for example, Mr. Green's comment was, or question was based upon if a hypothetical single payer were to be passed in the state of California, how would that impact our health department?
Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director, good morning. The county spends considerably more on providing medical care to indigent and low-income persons than we'd be required to if we were only providing care to the indigent. That's one of the very positive things about the health care safety net that exists in this county, and through the decisions that your board and previous boards have made, principally to redirect a portion of the savings that we realized when we closed the hospital and handed the responsibility to run the clinics over to community health centers of the Central Coast. We were able to reduce our costs and still invest quite a bit more in the delivery of medical care. What that leaves us with, however, is we're spending in the current year about $3.6 million via our contract with community health centers of the Central Coast. If we were only taking care of the indigent, the cost would be much, much lower. And that's why there continues to be some pressure through periods of time where we have to reduce the budget on reducing that particular allocation. So Mr. Greening is right. If we were only spending what it took to take care of those folks for whom we're legally obligated to provide care, the medically indigent adult, we would have very little discretion to reduce those spending levels. But because we're providing care to a very large number of low-income people through our grant to CHC, that's one of the areas where there continues to be risk for budget reductions.
I think Mr. Hill has a question for you.
Yes, Mr. Hamm. Mr. Hamm, on that subject, where we're providing care for low-income, which we're not legally obligated to provide care, how does that compare to perhaps some of our neighboring counties?
Well, I only know the answer to that anecdotally, but I've been unable to find any in our size range that are investing as much on that as we are. We are going to be gathering up more detailed information about that for the special study session that's scheduled for March 30th.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hamm. I think Mr. Seabuck can answer the questions regarding budget.
Mr. Chairman, Jerry Seabuck, County Auditor Controller. In response to the question about where's the detailed information is specifically about revenues, in the county budget document, the blue pages have every single revenue item there. The county budget document is available for purchase, but it's also downloadable on a county website. And the comprehensive annual report, which is produced by my office, is also purchasable, but it's available on the Slo County web pages.
Could you just briefly describe how to navigate the county website to get to that budget so someone would want to find it?
Well, if you get to the county webpage, pick departments and auditor controller, and then I think it's financial reports or something.
Okay.
They are there for several years going back. The budgets, I think, are in the administrative office. As a department. But call, somebody could help with that too. But
right.
It's out there. It's overwhelming for most people. They don't want to spend the time trying to understand it. Yeah, there you go.
Are they also in the libraries?
Yes,
I believe they are.
Yeah,
so.
I think so.
Yeah. There are libraries in the county.
And I think too that, and if you do have questions, feel free to call Mr. Seabrock's office. And
no, call his legislative assistant.
And my legislative assistant call Mr. Seabrock. Thank you. Any other questions from the board at this point?
I'll be sure, since the budget is available only in our major libraries, I'll check with the Oceano Library if they don't have one, since they're not considered major. Major will be the one at the regional center. Royal Grande, I'll be happy to purchase a package and post it in the Oceano Library for the community's use.
Okay. Let's take about 10 minutes. We'll be back at 10:40, please.
You are live.
Okay. We will reconvene. Is there anything further that we need to do on the budget update?
Thank you.
Any more questions at this point? Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Mr. Greening's comment regarding the potential state takeaways. And Mr. Buckshaw, you referenced that too, that our entire budget is crafted with no assumptions about what the state might do. And I know there are a number of efforts, actually, spearheaded by the California League of Cities to put some initiatives forward that would prevent the state from doing that. And I'm just hopeful that we're tracking that effort and that we engage at the appropriate time and have that conversation.
Yes, Jim Grant, County Administrator. We are tracking that on a daily basis. But the fact is, it's so early in the state budget process that it just swirls around up there. We don't know what to track. We don't know what is next. And so it's hard for us to make any assumptions at this point in time that some particular thing is going to happen. So we're just more of a wait-and-see, looking, watching, and try not to react to each little area that comes up in debate, because many times those things don't come to fruition, and it's just we're just wasting our time. So, but we are tracking it, and we will we'll let the board know as soon as those things happen. If we need to take some sort of legislative action, then we'll bring that to your board as
okay,
well.
Okay, I know the California League of Cities and CSAC are involved in the conversations, and I just want to be sure we're on the right end of that.
We are.
And we do have, if your board's interested, I have a few PowerPoint slides run through on the governor's proposed budget that'll give a high-level overview of where things stand.
I think that would be a good thing if you... Yeah. But let me go to Supervisor Assange.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask a question maybe in a different way, that no matter how well we prepare, by the time it comes for the state to approve their budget, we don't know how much shorter they're going to get at that time. How would that impact us, and are we leaving room to absorb whatever we get attacked with from state capital?
I think the general approach would be that we'll have to revisit the budget depending upon what occurs. We've made some general assumptions around state-provided revenues based upon the best information available at the time. The general approach has been that they maintain, they're relatively the same as what they are currently, that we've kind of hit the bottom, but there's no doubt there are going to be some additional cuts. The biggest areas are health and human services.
Dan, is your microphone on?
Scoot over closer to it.
Thanks.
The biggest impact would be health and human services, which I can speak to here, and they are working with their folks very closely in Sacramento on a virtual daily basis to stay in tune with that so that we know what's coming down the pipeline. But the last 2 years, what we've had to do, it really depends on when the state adopts its budget. If it makes them adopt something soon, then certainly we can incorporate that into our process prior to budget hearings. The year prior, however, was the longest delay in history of the state. I believe it was September time frame before it was adopted, and therefore we had to come back in November and make some adjustments. So really the budget is an ongoing issue at this point in time that we're checking in and updating as needed.
Okay, thank you. Well, one thing, and I'll make a comment and I'll go to Supervisor Gibson, is in our budget discussions, we're looking at more than likely dropping the RCRC participation and putting a little bit more focus on CSAC. Our representative, Supervisor Gibson, has graciously decided to continue his efforts at CSAC level, and I think that we can be a little bit more create a little bit more of an impact and have a little bit more understanding of where the state's going if we have a little stronger participation at CSAC. And so rather than burden him with both RCRC and then it would be left up to me to take RCRC, I think we're going to take our monies and delete most of it, but transfer some of that over into the CSAC portion of it to allow for him to get up there to participate much more from the CSAC level. Mr. Gibson.
Sacrificing me to Sacramento.
Yes, sir, we are.
That's what I was going to comment on, is that certainly our association, State Association of Counties, and also through the California Association of Councils of Governments, CalCOG, I'm going to be going to Sacramento tomorrow on both counts there. Both institutions have grave concerns about what we see coming down the road. It's the same old thing. That the state's going to balance its budget on the back of the local jurisdictions. The one thing that I have seen in my 3 years on this board is that we are starting to shift the tide, if you will, by making it clear to the legislators what effect their decisions have on local jurisdictions. And that wasn't the case when I came in. They were going to cut necessary funding for very important things that we do here on the local level. They were getting away with it without much comment. Well, that's changed, and that'll be continue to be the message, that if the legislature is going to balance the budget in one way or another, they're going to do it with the full light of the local jurisdictions on their decision-making process. And we can only hope that's going to bring a better, although perhaps not a good result for us. We're working hard on that, though.
Okay, well, let's move into the second portion of today's.
Did you want to take a look at the state?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Do you have that handy?
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
I do. And it's
good. I think that'd be good to hear.
I'll move through it relatively quickly. This is based upon the governor's proposed budget that was released on January 8th, and this PowerPoint was actually put together by CSAC. This is their take on it, so it's a bit higher level than just focused on our county, but it'll give everybody a good feel for where the proposal stands. You can see it's about a $20 billion deficit over the next 18 months, 6.5 this year, 12.5 in 10-11. And one of the big cornerstones of the budget proposal is that roughly a third, or $7 billion, is assumed to that they'll receive increased federal funding. And if that does not materialize, then significant program hits would occur. And this is, some of us may have read or seen on the news, the governor has been in Washington trying to make the rounds to get California's fair share, has been what he's been pushing for. On January 8th, the governor declared a fiscal emergency, and there is an emergency session of the legislature called in the session. That emergency session ends next Monday, February 22nd. There's 45 days in which the legislature has to respond. And at this point, there has not been a whole lot of movement, so we do not expect that much is going to occur by next Monday. In terms of the trigger cuts as it's being coined, of what occurs if that $7 billion is not received, CalWORKs, which is welfare, would be eliminated. In-home supportive services, which are basically in-home support for the elderly who would otherwise be in nursing homes or in hospitals, would be all out, completely eliminated. Healthy families, which is health insurance for low-income children, would be completely eliminated. There'd be a shift of the prison population from state prisons to potentially to county jails. Medi-Cal eligibility would be reduced. And then mental health Services Act funding, Prop 63, I'll speak to that more in a moment, would be redirected. And then the second bullet on the right-hand side is interesting. The state has kind of learned over the years on this. But related to the elimination of the three programs I mentioned on the left, CalWORKs, IHS, and Healthy Families, there's a local share of cost for that. There's federal funding, state funding, and a local share. Well, in the past, when those programs were proposed for elimination, counties would actually realize a budgetary savings, even though the programs would be eliminated, it'd be horrendous to those who receive the services. From a financial standpoint, the county would save that money. Well, the state realized that that would be the case. This second bullet here would redirect any of that savings back to the state, so counties would not realize any savings along those lines. This is a similar slide to what I just mentioned. The third bullet is of interest in that the first five funding and Mental Health Services Act funding, there's talk of having a ballot measure in May where the voters would vote to redirect that to the state. It's the exact same ballot measure that failed last May. These were already tried a year ago and did not pass. As you can see, additional $3.5 billion of cuts if that $7 billion of federal funds does not materialize. Transportation, this is a rather elaborate shell game that I won't go into a lot of detail. Bottom line is the state's trying to get around Prop 42. Prop 42 was a voter-approved initiative that provides gas tax funding to counties and cities for roads. And there are some constitutional guarantees and protections, if you will, that the state cannot raid that funding. The state's looking at creative ways to reorganize that initiative, if you will, so that they can get at the funding. This is something that is being tracked very closely. This was a big issue in the 2009-10 budget, and I suspect it'll be a big issue again in the upcoming budget. Public safety. There is a constitutional amendment that's being termed Books Over Bars, which has a rather catchy tune where it would state that no less than 10% of the general fund could be spent on higher education, state general fund, and no more than 7% on the prison system. On the surface, that sounds like a reasonable approach. I think most people would agree that more money should be spent on higher education than on prisons. The challenge with this is that it creates a formula-driven aspect of the budget. And one of the biggest complaints of the state budget, as well as the federal budget, is that so much of it is on autopilot per mechanism such as this. So this would just further reduce the discretion that the legislature has over the budget. You can see certain felonies, jail time may be reduced, and then, as I mentioned, some of the prison population may be sent to county jails. We don't have finite details at this point. Government finance and operations, the bit of good news, the first bullet, there was the special election that occurred last May related to the state budget that the governor's proposal includes reimbursement to counties for that. That's likely somewhere around $300,000 to $500,000 for us locally, so that's good news. last year a number of state mandates where the state then has to provide funding because otherwise it would violate the unfunded mandate legislation. So a number of these mandates have been suspended, not necessarily eliminated, which puts counties in kind of an awkward situation in that it's suspended, we're not going to receive the money, but it's not all out eliminated. So we can either stop doing it and then maybe have to start doing it again in a few years, or we just keep doing it, but it's on our nickel at that point in time, similar to what we did. And then this last bullet, for those that are familiar with the city of San Francisco, there's a building downtown that's called the Triple Nickel due to its address. Well, this is Sacramento's version of the triple nickel, in that state employees would be impacted rather significantly. 5% reduction to the workforce, 5% cut in pay, and a 5% increase to costs of sharing pensions for all state employees. Don't know if the governor will be able to pull this off, but this is currently one of the tenets of the governor's proposal. You can see our agriculture and natural resources, no funding for Williamson Act. That was cut in 09-10. No surprise that it's not added back in 10-11. Does leave counties in a similar situation to the suspended mandate, and that counties still can carry out the program should they choose to do so. We have continued to do so, but that's something that will likely come back up for discussion given that counties not receiving any funding. There is a proposed surcharge on residential and commercial property insurance to help fund state firefighting resources for CAL FIRE. And the bottom line here from CSAC's perspective is that this is not a realistic budget, that it's not seen as politically feasible, and it will likely, whatever is adopted by the legislature, will likely be dramatically different than what's been proposed in January by the governor. The next steps, CSAC is in close contact with counties on a regular basis. I'm sure all of you receive numerous emails and updates as well, a number of committees that are meeting, and we'll be coordinating as much as possible with CSAC, with our state representatives and others to help mitigate the negative impacts. And that's it for the overview.
Mr. Sargent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish I could tell by eliminating some of those services under the very first column you showed us, such as IHSS, and how much more expensive it is to have those folks go to a nursing home and comparison if some a family member is taking care of them at their own place. That's more of a comment than a question, since I don't think you'll have those figures. But on the other hand, state didn't learn their lesson when last time they attacked First Five money, because what they're going to do is to fill in their gap with First Five money, going to have such a larger gap on a local level. Because locally, we've been able to do a much better job to fill in the gaps within our communities with the monies that's available for each county, and our share is very slim, $2 million a year on the average. As we do a good job by educating the public why not to smoke, and smoking goes down, so does those dollar amounts in the First Five, the Prop 10 money. It bugs me that they're only selfishly thinking how they can cover up for their expenditures and let us suffer even more on a local level.
Mr. Hill?
Yeah, I'll just follow up on Supervisor Sajid with a similar comment, which I get a sense that some parts of the state legislature are committed to perhaps the only spending that they would approve would be signs that go throughout the state and say, "Welcome to Mississippi." Where we're headed.
Well, we will be having constant updates from admin, especially Mr. Buckshy, Mr. Grant, in regard to where we are with the budgetary issues that are coming down from Sacramento, and hopefully with our added ability to participate at CSAC level, we'll be well informed to make the adjustments when necessary. With that, let's move into our next item.
Our next item is B1, consideration of a report regarding the county's 5-year capital improvement plan.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Yes, thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrator. We're going to move into the second presentation by the General Services Agency staff. We have Katie Perez that will be giving the presentation. Mark Moore will be presenting the details if needed.
Katie and Mark.
Good morning. I'm Katie Perez, a deputy director within the General Services Agency, and one of my areas of responsibility is capital projects, and that's the whole gamut from planning through the delivery of the final project. With me today, I have Mark Moore. He's our architectural supervisor within the agency, and he is responsible for our capital projects. Additionally, I want to thank Vince Marici of the County Administrator's Office for his assistance in completing this report. He was really key in helping me get a grasp of the magnitude of it. I also would like to acknowledge Dave Flynn of Public Works and Chuck Stevenson and Cammie Griffin of Planning for their role as participants in a team known as the Infrastructure Planning and Financing Team, and you'll hear more about that team later on today. Today we're going to talk about capital and infrastructure planning for the next 5 years, and that's fiscal year 2009-10 through 2013-14. It seems like a wide range of years, but we really need to get a grasp of what's coming down the pike for us. My portion will address just those projects managed by General Services Agency. And the last time your board heard from us was in October of 2008, so it's really time for us to address this again. Our goals today are to have a very high-level discussion surrounding capital projects. We want to talk about why we plan for capital projects and discuss a little bit the difference between the annual and the five-year plan. We have two plans running concurrently, and it can get confusing. Attachment 1 in your packet is a comprehensive list of the full five-year capital improvement plan for the fiscal year 9-10 through 13-14. And we'll also touch on a few of our high-level projects. We won't get into detail on all of them, but I picked a handful of the high-level ones to give you a brief overview. And as each of these projects near their start date and they enter programming and design phases, your board will have the opportunity to discuss each project in detail before approving the project. So why do we plan for capital projects? Well, in a nutshell, it's to allow us to meet our obligations to provide those services that we are required to provide and to align our financing with those requirements. If we didn't plan, we would just stumble around and projects would be addressed willy-nilly, and we want to really focus on what is needed for our county. What's the definition of a capital project? I think Mr. Grant touched on it early, and I'll repeat it. They're defined as one-time expenses for acquisition, remodel, construction, demolition, or improvement of real property. And we fine-tuned it to differentiate the five-year capital improvement plan from our annual plan. So you'll see that if it's less than $250,000 and we can accomplish it within maybe a 12 to 18 month period, we call that our annual capital plan, and you see that every year as part of the budget submittal. If it's greater than $250,000 and covers multiple years, then it's generally categorized as a five-year capital project. And sometimes projects kind of straddle and will fall into the annual versus the five-year. We do our best to address which category they belong in and make sure that you get to review each of them as they're brought to you. How does a project make it to the list? Is it done in some back room with just two or three people? No. We start by evaluating the previous five-year capital improvement plan, and we meet with departments to discuss what their needs are. And that's part of our annual call for projects. We query all of the departments and say, what are your needs? We prepare a list of those requests, and then we divide them into the annual list versus the five-year list. Are they greater than $250,000 or less than $250,000? We also talk to our maintenance staff to see what their annual inspections have revealed, because it's key to get those insights from our maintenance staff to let us know when roofs need to be replaced or air conditioning equipment needs to be replaced. A steering committee then reviews all of these requests, and the steering committee is composed of General Services, the Administrative Office, the Auditor's Office, and we have departmental representation also on that steering committee. And we review them against the board-adopted criteria, and we look at those projects in light of existing and potential funding. That's key. Given what you've just heard, if there's no funding, projects aren't going to move forward. Attachment 3 of your packet will give you the complete criteria, and it's listed here on the screen for you. And we use this criteria to ensure that projects of the highest priority are selected for inclusion in the capital improvement plan. We also link to other plans. Some of the other plans that we make sure we link to or are aligned with would be the County Operational Area Master Plan, and that's for all the facilities out in what we refer to as CAMP. The North County Regional Center, and that identifies the uses and areas in the North County. The downtown campus master plan, that's the area here where our offices are and the government center is. The airport master plan, which identifies the plans for the San Luis Obispo Airport, both the land side and the air side. And we also consider strategic growth principles. It's key that we align all these together to make sure that we're marching to the right tune. The five-year capital improvement plan is a rolling capital improvement plan. What that means is it moves ahead in one-year increments. So you'll see me again next year talking about a block of 5 years that's rolled ahead another year. Each year we add new projects based on the criteria, and we consider funding constraints, scope changes, and program changes. And you'll see that sometimes projects may be on the capital improvement plan, and then their funding disappears, and so they're going to be pulled off. Or maybe projects that we've considered doing didn't have funding, and all of a sudden funding becomes available, so they're added on. So this is a morphing and growing process. We have approximately 8 well-trained capital project coordinators in our ARC services area. They're under the supervision of Mark. They handle all of these projects. For this capital improvement plan, we're adding only 3 new projects. There's a total of 27 projects, and many of those are underway, and the 3 new that we added are all airport related. The estimated total cost for all of these projects is $141.7 million. And I'd like you to bear in mind that these are early estimates. Construction costs fluctuate based on uncertain market conditions. We heard a discussion about perhaps future inflation, and here's where it could be felt. The five-year plan is a guide for future capital projects, and it's used to prepare the recommended projects for budget. Circumstances may require that we add or defer projects, and we'll have a better picture of each project's estimated cost when it becomes an active project and enters the programming and design phase. Your board reviews each project prior to launch, including those refined estimated costs. So here's a breakdown by functional area. You can see that our capital improvement needs cross all functional areas of the county, and these are based on the priorities. There's a different way to view the capital improvement plan. I wanted to look at what's in the future part only, because some of the projects that are on the plan are already underway. This is a list of 18 planned future projects with an estimated cost of $98.3 million. Some of these projects, on the total of 27, the list that has 27, were started several years ago. Your board first addressed this in May of 2007, and those projects are now underway. For example, the Cambria and Atascadero Library, they appeared on our 2007 plan as starting up in 910, and now we're there and they're underway. To a large degree, the $98.3 million list there is the unallocated cost for projects that are in the future. Now we'll jump into some highlights of a few of the high priority projects. I wanted to start with the women's jail. And this project is to address some issues and deficiencies in the women's jail unit. We've been conditionally awarded $25.1 million through Assembly Bill 900, and that involves the use of revenue lease bonds. There's a workshop being held the end of February in Sacramento, and we have some real concerns about drafting those agreements with the state. We want to make sure that our best interests are represented, so there's a team of staff who will be attending that training to make sure that our interests are represented in those agreements. This project has been in the planning stages for some time, and it's designed to address deficiencies in the existing facility. We currently have design development work complete, and the rough estimated cost is $33.5 million. Our next steps are to complete the construction documents. However, we need greater confidence that the AB 900 funding will be available. Without the funding, we can't move forward. And here's the breakdown of the proposed funding for this project. A steering committee has been formed, and we have representatives from the Sheriff's Department, the Administrative Office, General Services Agency, and the Auditor's Office, and they help us plan how this project moves forward. And as soon as we're confident on the funding and the agreements with the state, then we will move forward. One thing we need to consider when we look at projects is future operational costs. That includes staffing and maintenance. Maintenance costs for structures are generally in the $2.50 to $4 per square foot per year. This can vary with the age and condition of the building and the complexity. Jails run 24/7, and they sustain enormous wear and tear. Annual staffing costs were originally projected at $1.7 million for the women's jail, and that projection was done back in early 2009. The Sheriff's Department is really better prepared to address future annual staffing costs, and that will be included when your board next sees this project. Staffing costs would not impact county budgets until the completion of the facility, and your board will have ample opportunity to review all aspects of this project, including funding and staffing, as it moves through the approval process. I'm going to switch now to the juvenile hall expansion. We were conditionally awarded $13.1 million, and again, this is led by a steering committee that includes all of the stakeholders. When we run large projects, or even medium-sized projects, we form a steering committee so that we have a good view of where the project is going. The General Services Agency is preparing to move forward with a request for qualifications for architectural services. However, again, we need to ensure that the funding is secure. This is Senate Bill 81 funded, and at this point in time, we feel less secure about this than we do the AB 900 funding. The details of funding for this project are up here. It's the total of $17.5 million for the project, $13.1 million from the state bond funds, and $4.4 million from capital project fund reserve and in-kind match. And again, operations and maintenance costs are something we have to consider. Our staffing cost projections from early 2009 were roughly $700,000 per year. And again, the probation department can best address the future staffing costs. Maintenance and operational costs would likely fall towards the high side of the $2.50 to $4 per square foot range, as this facility would also sustain high use. Jumping to libraries. I want to talk about the library in Cambria. The expansion has been desired by the community for several years, and they have a very active Friends of the Library organization. We had an opportunity to purchase a new facility that came up in mid-2009. In early September of 2009, your board approved a Memorandum of Understanding, or an MOU, with the Friends of the Library, and that also defined a funding plan. The funding plan follows the board-approved policy that 50% of costs for new libraries be borne by the community. The estimated project costs for this library are $4 million. This project has an actively engaged steering committee and a selection committee. Again, the critical key is the 50% match from the Friends of the Library and the community. Additionally, consideration is given to ongoing annual costs for staffing and maintenance. But at this early stage, we've not detailed any of those costs, and it would depend on the size and design of the facility. These will be included in future updates to your board. Another library, the Atascadero Library. This project also has a very active Friends of the Library organization that are interested in expansion of the library to better serve the community. The preliminary cost estimate is $6 million, and our steering committee is looking at changes in real estate conditions that may present us with alternatives. The funding for the Atascadero Library, again, the county portion is 50%. $3 million will come from library public facility fees and other library reserve funds, and the remaining 50% will come from the Friends of the Library and other community contributions. The key to this project will be the identification of viable alternatives as well as funding requirements. As with all projects, we must be secure in the funding before making any of our contractual commitments. Additional considerations are given for ongoing annual costs, and these will be included in future updates to your board. Airports. I think it's important to talk about airports because we've seen that in our community, the airport is really part of one of the economic engines that drives our community, and it's key to our vitality. Here's an overview of the projects. The three new projects are all airport-related, so we've added three projects onto our report related to airport that bring 95% funding by FAA grants, and they align with the airport master plan. And the projects are to replace Taxiway D, to replace Taxiway A, and the Oceano Airport electrical improvements. And you'll see I've put the years out there where we expect them to kick into gear. Again, 95% funding by FAA grants and a 5% funding by the passenger facility charges. The airport rental car facility is on hold pending improvements in financial condition. We have to take a realistic look at all of these projects. The aircraft parking apron is in construction, and we expect it to be complete near the end of fiscal year 2010. For parking improvements, again, the original design has been reduced in scope to align funding with the program. And the terminal building, your board recently authorized the airport to apply for a $2.2 million grant from the FAA to fund the design of a new passenger terminal. Now, this concludes our look at a few of the high-profile projects and our high-level view of the 9-10 through 13-14 capital improvement plan. We thank you for providing this opportunity to let us discuss capital improvements, and we hope that it was informative. Are there any questions?
As all my lights light up. Mr. Asagian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The couple of areas for the women's jail and the juvenile hall, you speak of in-kind match. Where is that coming from? For $1.3 million, then $4.4 million, I believe.
For the in-kind match for the women's jail, Mark, I'll let you address that.
Mark Moore, technical supervisor. They're coming from both capital projects that have been completed in the renovation of the facility and ongoing costs to the county for architectural service, architect and engineering services, environmental services, consultant services, basically, and staff time that's required in managing the project.
So it's capital funds that have been set aside from the general fund to address the deficiencies, and that's our portion of the match.
Okay, thank you. Along those same lines, Ms. Perez, I know that other than the concern, which is obviously a major one, about the ability for the state to fund this, you mentioned that there are some concerns with the contract. Can you be a little bit more specific, or is it something that we have to wait to get?
I think I want to adopt a wait-and-see attitude. We just received copies of the proposed agreements, and they're very detailed and cover several areas. There's a construction agreement. There's at least three areas of these agreements. We've just received copies, and the whole steering committee is reading through them, so we're prepared to address those areas of concern when we get to the state. We want to make sure our best interests are guarded. And so, you know, we've had our first blush with them, and I'm going to adopt a wait-and-see attitude, and we'll come back and fill you in on the details.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A question regarding the airport and looking at the table on page B110. You mentioned a loan from the tax reduction reserves, and that would be repaid with parking revenues. And I know some of the things, we've made significant changes in what we're doing out at the airport relative to parking and the rental facility,
yes,
and so forth. And I'm just curious to know if the money has been drawn from the tax reduction reserve or not. Mr. Buckshire gave us earlier today an estimate of what was in the tax reduction reserve, and I'm just wondering where we are with that, if we're actually using that money for that purpose or not. Because I think originally when we considered it, it was projected to be paid back rather quickly with revenue, and then the airport took a downturn, and I'm just wondering where we stand with that, if we actually allocated and spent that money or if it's still in the reserve.
I think Mr. Marici is more familiar with that than I am.
Mr. Chair, Vince Marici with the County Administrative Office. About $9.25 million was already allocated to the project from the tax reduction reserve. So the figures that you saw in Mr. Buckshire's earlier presentation already has that money subtracted out. The project itself has used some of that money for design purposes for the airport. I believe your board allocated about $400,000 for design of the parking improvements and another $500,000 for the terminal design initial costs. So there is still money in the reserve. A portion of it has been allocated and a portion of it has been spent.
Okay, but the entire $9.2 million allocation was actually already
it's already been allocated.
Moved into another reserve account?
It was moved into the project itself.
Okay.
So.
Good. That's what I wanted to know, and thank you, Vince.
Thank you.
The other question I have is the juvenile hall and the women's jail. And granted, if the state funding comes through, as promised, we'll have most of what we need to construct both of those facilities to the capacity that we've designed for. And I'm just wondering if, in light of the current economic times, if we've considered other alternatives to building out to that level and spending that much money, $31 million for a women's jail and $17 million to expand the juvenile hall. I know some jurisdictions have taken other measures to reduce the projected need for their jail facilities and so forth, and I'm wondering if we've done that. And I know Mr. Chief Deputy Reed is in the audience, and he may better answer that question. I don't know.
That's really an operational question, so I would defer to Chief Deputy Reed.
And while he gets up there, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Jim Grant, County Administrator, I think you've hit on something that's very critical right now, that, you know, even after today's discussion on the budget and the $20 million gap that we have, it's pretty hard to fathom building a jail and a new jail and a new juvenile hall and staffing those. Because we're talking juvenile hall, just $700,000 a year in staffing alone, well over $1 million a year for staffing a new jail. It is a problem in my eyes in terms of how we're going to deal with that. Even though these facilities haven't been built and it will take a few years and hopefully we'll be out of our budget dilemma, those are still significant operational costs while we're adding to that, while we're cutting budgets and staffing right now. So I think that discussion is still open for debate. We obviously have carrots that are out there that we want to grab. We've got $25 million we can use for a new jail. We won't have that opportunity again for quite some time. So then the question becomes, do we still take that opportunity to build knowing that we have some significant staffing issues to deal with when it's built?
Do we have to take all that money and build to the level that we've planned, or can we ratchet that back?
At this point in time, based on what everything that's been done, we would have to take that money at this level. Otherwise, I think we'd start all over again, and that would be problematic in and of itself. So, you know, as much as I like to grab state money when we can and build, there's some issues that need to be discussed before we go too much further with this. But, Chief Deputy?
Mr. Reed, can you enlighten us a little further?
Good morning. Rob Reed, Chief Deputy with the Sheriff's Department. In the custody setting, we are at a point where we are running right at maximum capacity in our jail. We do what we can to reduce that population, whether it be through home detention, alternative work program, or other alternatives to incarceration. We face the problem of the state saying they're not going to take people anymore, or they want to reduce their populations. That will impact us. With summary parole, somebody commits a new charge or a new violation, they're going to be coming into our jail under fresh charges, so they're going to be staying with us longer. That is something that we have to look at. Other options we have are some things that other counties throughout the state have implemented, whether that be not holding pre-arraignment detainees. In other words, somebody gets arrested by an agency, they're brought to the jail, booked, and released. They're not held until their arraignment time. Misdemeanor violations, where you have misdemeanors, people who are convicted of misdemeanors, not being held in the jail. They're returned from the court and they are just released. We are not at that point. There are several counties that have actual capacity set on their jails that they can only hold so many inmates. And we're not there yet. Hopefully we will not get there.
Do you see an opportunity to adjust the size, or basically we're so far into it now with the planning and the architectural drawings and so forth that we need to build what's programmed, and I suspect that you plan for the next 20 years or whatever.
With the terms of the grant, we submitted an application saying this is what we're going to do. And part of that application is that we cannot change that. If we change or reduce it, then we start over again, and actually we would not be eligible for the funding.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Could we take that funding and basically give it to somebody else and send them there?
I wish. But no, no, we cannot. It's all held by the state.
I don't like that.
Pastor Robles, perhaps?
Mr. Asajian.
Thank you. What can we do in order not to lose the $25 million? Can we get it, and does it come with a time frame attached to it that you have to spend it, obviously, for the project designated for, but you have so many years that you accomplish that project? Is there any way we can not lose the opportunity, get the $25 million, and put it in our bank? That's one question, how much time we have. Question two, we don't want to reduce the size or change it, but can we go into phases and still qualify for that funding?
Okay, on the first part, we don't actually get the money until we spend it. It's a reimbursement rate. And that's some of the contracts that Ms. Perez, you know, was talking about. We haven't fully gone through all of those. We received five of them last week, and we've passed them out to our steering committee. And going through those, they are state contracts, and we're going to be looking at legal counsel for some guidance on those. Is some of the language, it's very specific to certain, whether it be the bond funding, the real estate, or, you know, how to operate your jail or what you can do with the land and stuff. It's very, very specific, and in some cases, languages many of us don't understand. So the steering committee is very, very important. As far as reallocating and moving things around, or is to phasing, our project does have a phase to it. And from the day we start construction, we must continue to move forward. If we stop in moving forward with that, the state's going to look at us and say, you're not going through with this, and we're not going to give you money. We don't get any of the money until we've completed certain portions of it. And part of what we're not sure of is how they're going to fund it. One of the questions the auditor came up with is in some of his readings early on in this was, is it a 90-day funding or a six-month funding? You know, how much money do we have to put out there during the project, you know, for it to come through? So.
Thank you.
There's one other item, too, is that if, when the board accepts the grant, you are actually guaranteeing that staffing will be completed when once the building is complete. You will open it and you will staff it.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Reed, or Ms. Perez, is there a specific time deadline by which we have to confirm that we're going to accept this money?
I'm not seeing any of that. We were hoping a long time ago that it would come, you know, a year ago. The state is moving at the state's own speed, and we're working with the Department of Finance through. We get to the Department of Finance through Correction Standards Authority and California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Nobody said, you know, when you have to start your project, but we're all gearing it towards when the money does come, then we'll start the project. And they want to see a standard construction progress.
And I'm reading construction in 12-13. Is that the expected?
It's going to depend on funding, a number of things. We've charted the construction time frame to be.
I'm just looking at your page, I guess, 3 of your table 1 or attachment 1, where it's listing the women's jail, and if I'm reading this right, you know, we're in the programming and design phase right now. We have $2 million that we're looking at for 10-11 and 11-12, and then the big chunk in 12-13. Is that start of construction, or is that?
No, that would be the end.
Okay, so that would be potentially opening in calendar year 13 or something like that.
According to the schedule, it's before you, yes.
Yeah.
And as we get to those out years, it becomes more and more fuzzy. This is one of those projects that seems to be in the hurry up and wait mode. We gear up and we're ready to go, and then the state sort of languishes. And so we're in that hurry up phase right now, but it might mean that we wait another 6 months before we really hear anything. We don't know.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is how much time we have to plan on the operational side here. What I'm hearing sounds like it's not going to be before 12-13.
Probably not.
I see nods from Mr. Marici. He's an experienced hand.
He is. We have probably a year of design work left to do before we can go out to bid. We probably will be out to bid for 60 days, something of that sort. So we're probably 2 to 3 years out.
Right. Vince Marici with the County Administrative Office again. It could be, Mark's right, we have about a year before we might be ready to consider bids, if you would. At that point, we would have to have all the agreements in place with the state, but more importantly, we would have to be assured that the state's ready to release the bond funding and that they have the funds to give to us. So that's a variable for which we can't predict. And it may be later than 2013 before the jail is actually completed and open, but 2013 would be a good target date for planning purposes at this point.
But what I'm getting at, Mr. Chairman, is we have some time to plan on this. The numbers are daunting, $2 million if you combine the women's jail with the juvenile hall. And I know that when we put items on the CIP, that they have to come with an operational outline. At least maybe where we are right now is asking for a little more detail and a little more frequent update on both the state of the capital funding and the state of the operational plan. To me, we're in an impossible bind in the manner of the way that the state is talking about treating incarcerated individuals. They're going to be coming back to us. I mean, that's just, I don't see how we're going to be avoiding that. And we can only hope that there might be money coming to us to help operate under that circumstance, but that's not certain at this point. So it seems to me we have to be extremely agile here to take advantage of these opportunities, because if we don't plan for this, we could well get the inmates without the new facility and the mandate to take care of business here. So at this point, given the lead time, is sort of the option of last resort would be to move ahead, but I think we have to do that with a great deal of knowledge.
Do you have another question for Mr.?
No, I didn't. It was just...
Thanks, Rob.
I appreciate that. Mr. Seabach is ready to give us the reality check here.
Mr. Seabach.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Jerry Seabach, Auditor, Controller. Chief Deputy Reed mentioned a short-term cash flow issue, which we are concerned with. Normally, if you have a reimbursable grant, you get payments every 30 days. So if you're diligent, you can almost do that you can do it with very little of local cash. But this one, they're talking about a 90-day turnaround. So we will need local cash to front. Contractors aren't going to wait 90 days to be paid on their progress payments. There's also a long-term cash issue for the state. They have to sell bonds. Their side of the funding depends on them selling bonds, and right now they probably couldn't sell those bonds at any price. So they are saying they're going to provide the interim funding to counties out of other funds, like internal borrowing. And as you know, the state's been doing a lot of internal borrowing over the last few years, so I have my doubts about whether that will be feasible. And I also want to amplify on Mr. Grant's comments. It is a concern for the operating expenses, definitely both in the juvenile services center and the expanded jail. If your policies that you just were talking about here were in place, where even though public safety is one of the top priorities, your direction to them this year is do the same with no increase in local cost. If they were under that constraint when these new facilities were coming online, that would mean they would have to take $1 million or $1.5 million out of some other part of their budget in their departments in order to comply with the agreement to open those facilities. So it'll be... you have to believe, I guess, it's if you if you think, you know, in 2-3 years from now, the state will be back on track and our revenues will be flush again, I don't believe it will ever be what it was in the heyday of the 80s and the 90s for our local revenues. So it's a concern.
Thank you, Mr. Seabrock. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two comments. One is that I think your recommendation is a wise one to put both of these projects on hold and not invest a tremendous amount of time and money until we get clarification on if and when the money's coming from the state. And I think your recommendation is good there. Also, regarding the operations and the need to have this additional $1.7 million for both facilities to staff them, I'm assuming that based on that, you'll be coming back to the board before we sign on the bottom line and commit ourselves to taking that money and doing these things, because that is a significant concern.
Yes, you have our guarantee. We'll be back before you, before we proceed too much further down the line and have this discussion. Once we know the funding is available, I think that might be a good time to come back, whenever that might be, and have a discussion with the board one more time.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments, and then I have one person request to speak here. But in that same regard, we start talking about operations of this facility, both these facilities. What effects does that have on our overall budget to other departments? I mean, if we're going to have to increase a lot of that staffing, then in my mind, something's going to have to give somewhere else. And I find it's so strange that the state's priorities seem to be flipped around, that we want to spend almost $40 million on two facilities, and we're talking about $6 million for two libraries. Now, it seems to me that we have the libraries to educate folks. Hopefully they'll keep them out of jail, but I like that books before bars thing. But as we come back and we start talking about these operations, I hope there'll be some comparisons done with what effect that will that have overall to other departments.
Well, that's certainly the conundrum we find ourselves in right now. I will remind the board that these projects have been around for quite some time, or years, and we were in a little bit better shape when it all started, where we felt that certainly we'd take advantage of the state revenue to build these facilities and have operational revenue to run them, but we've gone downhill for the last couple of years. So we find ourselves at a crossroads right now that we need to take our time looking at what's available and come back with that operational discussion about where we think we'll be in a few years and how that might affect the other departments. But we don't know. I mean, at this point in time, it's a crapshoot where we'll be in a few years and whether or not we can we'll have to take resources from other departments to open a jail or a juvenile hall.
I'm probably one of the biggest optimists there are out there, but from a state standpoint and from the financing standpoint, I'm pretty pessimistic that we're ever going to get back to a big windfall of any sort of profits. And even if we did, I hope we rethink the way we do things so that we don't put ourselves in a position of all of a sudden we have something that we can't take care of. One other comment that I wanted to make, too, and I'm very supportive of libraries, but I would hope that we would start going in a direction that weans the county off of libraries and incorporated cities. The city should be stepping up, I think, and taking over their libraries. I know that's probably not a real nice thing to say, but it's something that I think that you have these little communities all over this county that need help from a library standpoint, and yet the county doesn't have enough money to take care of that. Enough said. I have one request to speak. Ms. Gabrielle?
You're amazed what a community library can do.
Hi, Nina Grabio Oceano. I want to really just express a word of appreciation to the county administrator for his comments about basically, you know, operation and maintenance of any new project that this county engages itself in. You know, the federal government has a real knack for doing that. You know, they pass these laws and these whatever you want to call them, and then there's no money for it. and then everybody else down the other line is, you know, trying to bail out. One instance that comes to mind on that is just when they'd had this thing where now you had to have a passport to go to Mexico and come back, I guess, from Mexico. Well, they passed that law, but there was no funding to issue the new passports for everybody, especially all the people in California, Arizona, and so forth, going into Mexico back and forth all the time. And so there was a backlog. I mean, I had to wait months for my passport. I finally called CAPS office and I said, hey, you guys passed this law, but there's no funding to implement it. What's that all about, right? So anyway, so I appreciate your comment because, you know, people have to look long-term. What's the effect of what you're passing here, what you're deciding to do? Because, you know, you personally won't be holding the bag. Everybody else will. But I also want to question who's in these facilities? Who are we incarcerating? Does everybody who's in these facilities really have to be incarcerated? Are they really a threat, a physical threat to people? Or are we just putting people in jail because, you know, that's the thing to do nowadays? So because there is a lot of money being made off of privatized jail facilities. And somebody's making money there. And what, you know, how about looking at house arrest then? You know, if they're not really a total menace to society, don't have to be locked up, maybe we can just put them on house arrest, and that way they can't run around doing whatever they're doing to disturb the peace. I think that might save some money there if you don't have to build a new facility. But I also want to remind you guys about where is this money coming from? You know, you're saying it's coming from the state, right? Well, is it really? No, the state's broke. Okay, it's not coming from the state. The state's borrowing from the feds. Okay, the Fed have any money? No, the feds are broke. Okay, so the money is really coming from China and other countries. So let's not pretend. This country is financially broke. We have no money of our own. We're borrowing everything. And a lot of those countries now don't even want to deal with dollars that much anymore. So besides, you know, hyperinflation, that was not included, but you're just talking about inflation, not hyperinflation, but I think we're going towards hyperinflation. So not only are we talking about hyperinflation, you know, we're talking about a total meltdown, right? So I would think that this county has the resources. If you think about it, if everything went to pot in the whole world economic scheme here, this county has enough resources to hold its own. It really does. We've got the water, we've got land, we've got agriculture. And I would think that instead of playing the game that everybody else has been involved in as far as, you know, keeping people in the same loop, I think we need to start thinking outside the box.
Thank you, ma'am. I have no more requests to speak. Bring it back to the board. Any further comments? Do you have all you need? Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move into the next item, please.
The next item is C1, consideration of the 5-year plan capital improvement program overview.
Thank you. Mr. Grant. Lynn?
Yes. Next item is looking at the Public Works Capital Improvement Plan. And we have Mr. Dave Flynn here today to present that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. Today, we have the PowerPoint on board here. I'll be going over an overview of our financial plan for capital projects in the next 5 years. This will be divided into the various categories of work that we perform. First, we can look at which projects we've been doing these last year, which includes various utility projects, bridge projects, and safety projects, all funded through various sources of funding. Over the next 5 years, we anticipate funding in a number of categories, mainly roads. We have over 40 projects planned with anticipated or budgeted funds, approximately $100 million. In our water systems, we have about 15 projects totaling $11 million. Wastewater, we have 2 projects, one very large one, totaling $165 million, or expected to be about that amount. So over the next 5 years, we would anticipate developing a program that's about $280 million a year. Over the last 5 years, we've been maintaining a production of about $18 to $20 million in a capital improvement program. And again, we would anticipate doing the same over the next 5-year period with funding that we are anticipating or aware of. Another category, though, has been flood control and drainage improvements. And from previous work granted by your board for the six drainage studies in the communities, we know there's approximately $35 million worth of work that we would like to initiate. But again, this is very, very unlikely that we would see that funding. There are certain areas that we'll look at in this presentation that may have some funding and may move forward regarding flood control. So if we were to look at roads in particular, the major project in roads would be Willow Road Interchange. It takes up at least a third of that $100 million allocation. We are moving forward with at least a minimum build project that we could go forward with at the end of this year. A large sum of this money is State Transportation Improvement Program money, which we need to look at this summer to see if it's going to be available. Also factored into there here was a $6 million loan from the general fund that's been at least set aside in reserve for future use of this project. There are some road improvement fees in the various communities, about $8 million over the next 5 years that we would be proceeding with a few projects. But that's been scaled out significantly due to the revenue loss of road improvement fees. For rural road safety improvements, we have about $7 million of projects identified. Most of this is funded through federal grants that we receive. Probably amounts to about $2 to $3 million in that amount. And then about $4 to $5 million in Proposition 1B monies. And your board has adopted a finance program for the 1B money at previous meetings. We've received about half of the $11 million under Prop 1B that the county was entitled to. There remains about $5 million, which due to the bond sales, we do not know exactly when those will come forward. Finally, on the bridges, we have a very aggressive federal bridge replacement program that we continue to seek out and replace structures in the county. Sensimen Creek Road would be the projects we would be undertaking this year. Pavement management, ideally we would like to see a $6 million a year program to maintain the status condition of the roads. We certainly realize, though, that that's something that's going to be impacted through budget controls. We would anticipate trying to maintain at least a $3 million pavement management plan so that we can essentially, over the next 5 years, at least keep our pavement ratings around 55 to 60, as opposed to letting them drop further, where the expense will just be that much greater in the long term to restore the roads back to their condition. The roads do have a number of Safe Route to School projects and bike lanes. We get these primarily through state, some federal and local grants through San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and there's a number of those that we're working on in various communities. Under the water program, several county service areas have ratepayers and master water plans leading to capital projects on this list. Cayucas has a tank that's currently being refurbished and a new tank that's being planned over the next 5 years. Shandon has several projects planned, and that's also associated with development that may occur in the coming years. Santa Margarita just went through a water systems upgrade and is looking at replacing a tank up there this year. For the Lopez project, there's a number of projects for the water treatment plant facility upgrades, as well as improvements on the pipeline to do basic maintenance and repair. Some additional work for just state water that's already financed through partner agencies. Nacimiento, we would see shifting at the end of this year from being a capital project into an operational maintenance, and you know, we're doing that through our staffing in order to accommodate that as an operation project. And finally, Salinas Dam at the booster station north of the grade. There's several improvements planned there for both the electrical, mechanical, and storage facilities. And those are primarily are funded through our arrangements with the City of San Luis Obispo as being the water supply for that town. And that totals about $11 million. Wastewater, I know you hear frequently about the Los Osos project, and that's an ongoing thing that we certainly would anticipate. For flood control, this is the area that we certainly don't have the funding to tackle the projects that we have. Your board back in 2006 and 2007 did provide $4 million in general fund monies to tackle some of the more critical problems that were addressed from the six community studies done in 2003. And particularly in Napomo and San Miguel, we realized significant improvements that have fared very well over the last recent storm. So that $4 million has provided great improvements to those communities. But barring that, looking ahead, there's very, very limited opportunities to fund a lot of these challenges in the various communities. We are working to partner with Caltrans to fund improvements on Route 1 in Oceano. We do have some final phase 3 work in Cambria that we're finishing up now. And we may be looking at some potential drainage fees that we may come back to your board in the future to look at for San Miguel to keep pace with development in that community. The large project at the top, though, Arroyo Grande Channel, again, we're working on a water master plan, a programmatic EIR, in the hopes that down the road we can tackle a very large project for channel improvements in the long term there. One thing, at least in the public works business, is we have to expect the unexpected. And there are a number of road failures that turn into be major road repair projects, and we need to start anticipating how we're going to be able to resolve and fund these. Particularly on Santa Rosa Creek Road, we have we have about three sites now that need some attention. And they are areas that we haven't anticipated money to repair these. We're actively working on solutions currently, but we'll need to try to tackle 2 to 3 of these sites a year, and then look at where we're saving money from the road fund, particularly through our vacant positions, savings that we're seeing already in construction bids, and reduction in equipment replacement, to see if we can garner enough money to move forward with those projects. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have two, if I could. If you could go back to the slide, back to where the Los Osos project, and general fund says $2 million. I thought that there was $7 million that came out of there.
Mr. Chairman, that was not an accurate figure, the $2 million. That was, it hasn't been updated, so
okay.
You're probably correct.
Thank you. And then the loan that was taken for the general fund for Willow Road, when would that be paid back? Upon completion of Willow Road, or what stage?
For Willow Road, the $6 million would be factored into the project as we realize larger components. There would be a minimum build, and we would try to avoid tapping into the general fund. If we were to tap into it, we would anticipate the payment would be road improvement fees first, which come in at a rate of approximately $500,000 a year. The other option is we would be looking at potential parcel tax or some ad valorem tax with the folks down in Napomo. That is something we're going to discuss this summer after we receive bids on the first project.
Thank you. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the Royal Channel, and you had a question mark underneath the general fund, but isn't the Prop 218 monies that have been collected the zone of benefit to pay for the expenses?
The zone of benefit that was created, or the assessment that was approved a few years ago, doesn't cover adequately the amount of money to do the type of improvements needed for the channel. I believe it's collecting approximately $250,000 a year, and generally it would be probably a project between $15 and $20 million that would have to be taken on.
Well, what's collecting about $360,000 a year? Lower quarter million.
Supervisor Asajjan, members of the board, Pavel Ogren, Public Works Director.
Dave's correct in this. When the Prop 218 was established for flood control zones 1 and 1A, it was known that there would be some need for the development of grant revenues in order to complete, a project. Our basic rough estimates right now is that if we're looking at about a $6 million project down there, that the existing assessments would be able to fund the debt service on about $3 million, and so we would need to be able to go out there and get grants for about $3 million as well.
Are there any funding available for clean water or creek maintenance, restoration?
There is some, but just like all other grant pools, it's pretty limited right now. Next week on our trip back to D.C., we're going to be organizing a meeting with FEMA to address issues like Santa Rosa Creek Road, where, rather than waiting for it to break and looking for FEMA money to help with the protection, what type of grant revenues are available to prevent a problem from happening. So that's going to be one of the, efforts of going back to D.C. next year, is to see what type of opportunities might exist.
Now that after the earthquake, FEMA came to town in Bodie, Noshan, and Royal Grande, are there any FEMA monies to deal with the flooding issues?
Again, that's going to be something that we're going to have to look into more. Cambria was a really good example where FEMA provided not just money to correct for the floods that happened in Cambria, but also provided, several millions of dollars to help with the additional improvements in order to prevent it from happening again. It's a challenging area there in order to get money for prevention purposes, because they typically provide funding in response to disasters and things that break down.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. That was a point that I wanted to make. It's something that I think we need to start working a concerted effort. It's may take many years of lobbying, both through CSAC and NACO, to reset the mindset. We know we can get money when things go wrong. We can, I think, easily demonstrate that it costs less to fix it beforehand, and so we're going to be working that very very diligently. Going back to my favorite interchange project, which is Willow Road, I'm curious as to whether we might be able to get some details of that funding. You indicated you're going to be looking at that over the summer. Is that something that will be coming back to the board that we might be able to refresh our discussion of that and really set a course as to how we're going to get this done?
Yeah, Dave Flynn with Public Works. I think there's two issues that need to play out before we can come back and really give you a final take on the funding on Willow Road is at. First, we'll receive bids next week on Phase one, and we'll see what the environment for the bidding is.
You might refresh for the public. You might refresh us on what exactly phase one of that project is.
Yeah, thank you. Phase one being the extension of Willow Road from Pomeroy Road over to Hetrick. This is through the residential neighborhood and is already out to bids. And we'll be receiving bids next Thursday, the 25th. The second phase, which is the more expensive phase, is to then extend it easterly to the freeway, and then build the interchange. That's the minimum build that's acceptable to Caltrans. There's other elements that are attached to it, which would be the continued extension to Thompson, and potentially, in the future, the extension of Frontage Road down towards the swap meet area. So we'll receive bids on phase one next week. Then what we're actively pursuing right now is getting all the approvals from the state to receive the state transportation improvement program monies this summer at the June meeting. Once we see how the vote and where everything stands with the CTC, then we would come back to your board with essentially where this thing stands, and then provide that discussion with the community in terms of what gaps still exist. Thank you.
Thank you. One other point, and I think you're absolutely right on the mark as far as trying to do some proactive work before we have to have FEMA engaged in repair. But far too often we have competing agencies that don't allow that. I'll give you a prime example. On northern part of the Salinas River, north of Paso Robles, where that river necks down, we asked to get the river cleared. Corps of Engineers said, absolutely, you guys should do this. Fish and Game said, no way. So there you're stuck. until you get something that happens to ask FEMA to come in to give you money to repair something that you could have prevented. Makes absolutely no sense. Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Okay, with that, I don't see anybody in...
Yeah, I have a...
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Green, how could I ever forget you, sir?
Thank you, yeah, I am Eric Greening, and I have a couple of questions. Partly, I'm sort of having trouble with the format on pages C16 and C17. I guess it comes to the definition of the word source. A source, in my mind, means something is available and you can use it. But what's in this column merges without distinction grants and loans. And a loan is not a source. At best, it's an advance. So I would certainly prefer two columns where we identify what is the actual source, you know, what sources do we know, what can we count on, what can we identify, or at least grants we're applying for, and then see the loans in a completely different category. And so of the total list, and I know they're not all identified as loans, for example, with Los Osos Wastewater Plant, it says State Revolving Fund. My understanding is that it's primarily a loan fund that has to be repaid. Is it entirely a loan fund, or are there grants possible within it? But basically, to break out, what percentage of what we're talking about as quote-unquote source is grant, where we have the money and we spend it, and how much is loan? And then with the loans, what is the timing of the repayment? What is likely to be the added interest? Because we have to budget for that. That's not a source. That's an obligation. That is a future obligation or a present obligation. One project that's already been talked about where I have a kind of a time-bound question we have to be thinking about. Willow Road Interchange, to the extent that it is paid for and by development that has not yet occurred. What is the scenario and what is our position in the event that a water emergency causes a building moratorium on that mesa? Even with the work they're doing right now in the CSD to get state water in there, that just brings it barely back to the current state, to what would have been the state of balance with the development at the time that was approved, as I understand it, and further continued development might knock things again out of balance, and it's an extremely precarious balance in an area where water supply will continue to be a problem and perhaps a crisis. So my question is, if we are making this interchange and its financing contingent on continued development, and that development doesn't happen, who is holding the bag once the contracts have been let to build the interchange? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Bring it back to the board. Mr. Flynn?
First to respond to Mr. Green's question on the source versus funding. You know, again, this was just an overview table. Our department provides breakdown each budgetary year on in terms of exactly what sources go into what projects, and those are available through the budget sources, and we submit it through admin. On the issue on Willow Road, what we have so far is a funding agreement with the Woodlands project, which still has about $9 million remaining to it, which is a large factor into constructing the Phase 2 interchange minimum build project. And that's something that the Woodlands project had already gotten their water allocations worked out with some time ago when that project moved forward. So in anticipating the State Transportation Improvement Program funding and the Woodlands money moving forward, we would see that as a sufficient money to build a minimum build project. You know, certainly we can look at further with future discussions on the other elements for extension of Frontage Road and Thompson, which may be issues to address with future development when it's approved.
Thank you. And if we fall short of that, Mr. Asajian's checkbook will help us out.
No problem.
Gentlemen, we have one more to go through. Do you want to continue to go through here, and then we have about a half hour for closed session, if I understand correctly.
Yes.
Want to keep going? Let's keep going. Okay, great. Thank you. Madam Clerk?
Okay.
Next item is D1, a status report from the Infrastructure Planning and Finance Team.
Grant. Yes, thank you, Jim Grant. The next item is presented by Planning and Public Works. Chuck Stevens from the Planning Department will be presenting this item, and that is looking at the infrastructure over the next 30 years and what we'll need to meet that in terms of upgraded facilities and funding. Chuck.
Mr. Stevenson.
Thank you, Chairman Meacham and members of the board. Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. I'm here representing the Infrastructure Planning and Financing Team, comprised of members of several departments, including General Services, Public Works, the Admin Department, also including SLOCOG has participated, as well as LAFCO, and, of course, our Planning Department. Today's presentation is to give you a status report on the Infrastructure Planning Team, efforts that we've been undertaking. And as your board has been interested in for the last several years in capital expenditures that will be needed to implement strategic growth, as we know, capital expenditures for the unincorporated communities could be significant in the next 30 years. And to provide for existing infrastructure deficiencies and for new and upgraded facilities that will be needed to meet anticipated population growth and for enabling sustainable development and economic growth. Today's discussion is to review previous board direction on infrastructure planning and staff responses, to highlight activities of the Interagency Infrastructure Planning and Financing Team that was established earlier in 2009, and to present to you a proposed infrastructure planning and financing policy for your board's consideration. In terms of background, you'll recall that, for some of you, that in late 2005, a report was presented to your board that responded to these issues that I've just mentioned and suggested a variety of infrastructure financing options and recommendations for implementing them. That list is also attached to your report today. It's an attachment to, by the way, I'll just mention for the public, there are copies of the staff report and the slideshow to my left here. The board's action that day was to authorize Public Works Department and Planning and Building to prepare an interim infrastructure financing plan for use with the Willow Road extension and the Highway 1 interchange, 101 interchange. And also under the board's direction was to identify an interim infrastructure financing policy. Well, under that effort, the Planning Department hired Tosig and Associates to evaluate the use of a community facilities district, or a Mello-Roos financing approach, to fund the project shortfall on Willow Road. In 2006, we presented that to your board as a mechanism. However, due to the high annual assessment that would be required of the near-term development, your board directed to pursue other methods. And so in the past 2 years, we've met with the community, had discussions on funding issues, possible approaches to funding the gap. And in short, the community felt that additional outside funds would need to be sought to complete the project before local taxation should cover the gap. So as Mr. Flynn just summarized for you, where we're at today with Willow Road is that the project Phase 1 from Pomeroy to Hetrick is being advertised for construction bids. This project is about $7.3 million, and it's funded from several different sources. One, road fees collected from development, some funds from the Federal American Recovery Act funds, and the State Local Partnership 1B funds. The second phase, which would include the interchange and extend off to Thompson Road, is the major portion of this project, and as Mr. Flynn indicated, we'll need to be waiting to see how the funding will occur for that. The board also directed that the staff prepare an infrastructure financing plan for each of the unincorporated communities in the county with special attention designated for the urban areas. However, staff determined that these would take a number of years and a considerable amount of financing to fund those. And so we returned to your board with an alternative approach, which was to develop an infrastructure financing plan as we updated each community plan update. So an example currently that we're doing, working on, is Shandon Community Plan, which will include an infrastructure financing plan. Essentially, staff had reviewed a number of infrastructure financing plans, and the following steps were consistent with each one of those. And essentially was to identify the facilities that were needed and their costs, to develop a financing policy and approach, to allocate the costs to each land use based on a benefit formula, to estimate and include the ongoing net costs for maintenance, and then to determine an optimal mix of local bond funding and impact fee revenues to pay for it. There were also issues occasionally where the county may need to have an interim policy for public improvements where the health and safety issue may arise, or where infrastructure is needed to implement critical commercial or residential development for achieving county goals. Now, to talk briefly about the infrastructure planning and financing team. In May of 2009, a core group of county and regional staff, including Public Works, Planning and Building, General Services, Admin Office, Council of Governments, and LAFCO, was formed to discuss a development of an infrastructure financing policy in response to two general plan programs that were adopted as part of the strategic growth amendments to the general plan that your board adopted the month prior to that. And then more recently, the Auditor Controller's Office was brought into this group. The two policies that you adopted stated are up on the screen, basically to convene an interdepartmental team and come up with a policy that would create an infrastructure policy that addresses new development paying its fair share, that the larger community pay its fair share for existing deficiencies, and improvements providing general benefit, that infrastructure is in place or funded concurrently with the need, and that funding mechanisms such as considered Community Facilities District or Mello-Roos.
Chuck, I have a question here real quickly.
Sure.
Supervisor Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chuck, on this item where you list that, and I was looking also in the staff department, staff report, new development pay its fair share, community pays its fair share for existing deficiencies, and improvements providing general benefit. How do we determine that? I guess when we get to the fair share part for both new and existing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the part of the discussion that we would need to have with each community and decide based on the levels of deficiency there in the infrastructure, how the community sees itself willing to participate. And, for example, we had those discussions in the Pomo with residents, and there was a lot of, I think, hesitancy and disagreement over what is their fair share. That's part of the discussion that we'll need to have ongoing with each community.
So it would be, to some extent, based on the community's deficiencies, based on the new development itself, and I guess I'm still not totally clear.
Well, new development cannot be required to pay for an existing deficiency.
Right.
And where we have policies in the general plan now that are encouraging compact urban form, emphasizing more development in our existing urban areas, we need to find a way of expressing the benefit to the communities on what ultimately how those communities will be improved by them paying for their fair share of those improvements, such as improved transportation system or parks, things that are necessary for implementing true strategic growth. And that's going to be the challenge.
Yes, in terms of the, thank you, Mr. Chairman, in terms of the impact borne by new development, it would seem to me we have the AB 1600 process that we have to go through, and looking at the proper proportionality of impact fees. And in any case, the matter of existing deficiencies and the need of a local community to fund that, subject to Proposition 218 votes. So it seems to me that the legal structures are there, that the conversation eventually gets around to those two particular things. But I think the discussion of the consequences of choosing or not choosing to fund infrastructure, things that we've talked about in strategic growth, bringing those forward to the community so they can have an informed discussion as to what kind of quality of life issues might ensue as we look at the infrastructure, a lot of which is aging, and that's, I think, one of the big concerns.
We'll also have ample input from Mr. Bunin and the Home Builders Association as to what's fair. Mr. Stevenson, go ahead.
And so I will I'll go over in just a moment the proposed infrastructure financing policy with you, but I wanted to just continue that the committee also discussed the need for the concern for a consolidated capital improvement plan, and as you know, currently the county doesn't have a consolidated capital improvement plan. General Services has one, as you saw this morning, as well as Public Works, but the committee felt that pursuing a consolidated plan could have some real benefits. This is listed here. Would enable the public and decision makers and county departments to view a more complete picture of the capital facility and infrastructure improvement needs in the county and participating communities. Would make for a more informed decision-making process, provide for better coordination of projects identified in the county general plan with the departments and governmental entities that are responsible for development of projects, and would facilitate better coordination among county departments in CIP planning. For example, by enabling phasing of projects or taking into account perhaps including related projects of other agencies. So getting back to the proposed infrastructure policy included in your staff report, the idea was to focus on those infrastructure that's necessary for strategically planned communities. Earlier, Ms. Perez went through General Services infrastructure needs for facilities such as women's jail and other facilities like that, libraries. But this policy was focused more on the infrastructure needed to accommodate strategic growth. So, for instance, then adequate resources and services for the long-term growth for 20 years or more, that for interconnected street systems, bicycle and pedestrian ways, neighborhood areas that can accommodate a variety of housing types that are affordable to all income groups, that are located to focal points serving daily needs, adequate areas for commerce, employment, education, open space, parks, recreation, and civil and social life. So the policy dealt with in a more focused way on these improvements that you see, or infrastructure you see on the overhead, roads, water and sewer systems, highway interchanges, parks, drainage systems, and other services that facilitate long-term growth. So going just briefly through the policy, the idea, the bullet points that are in the recommended policy include promoting participation of communities to address existing deficiencies, to be oriented toward implementing the general plan, to be flexible in consideration of future amendments that might adopt strategic growth policies and create opportunity for planned communities, and then to identify specific time frames and require the new development finance full cost of infrastructure needed to support the new development.
A question from Supervisor Patterson, if I could.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stevenson, many of our unincorporated urban areas have CSDs, community service districts, that provide wastewater and water services as well as garbage and park maintenance and a variety of things. And yet the county maintains the land use jurisdiction, and it's really essential, I think, to coordinate with the CSD so they're providing services consistent with the needs that would occur if we built out according to the community plan or the general plan for the region. And I'm just curious, I love the idea of the infrastructure planning and financing team. I think you brought all the appropriate people together with the exception of the CSDs. And I'm wondering if you're planning on working closely with them, because what we're finding is that oftentimes what their constituency, and they have an elected board, really, that makes decisions on the services they provide, and oftentimes their board isn't necessarily in agreement with what's needed to build out the community to, you know, our desires or the county's desires, if you will. How do you plan on dealing with that
issue? Well, that's an excellent point, Supervisor Patterson, and one in which the committee has discussed at length. In fact, we made a special point in the report to indicate that we will be inviting other outside agencies, particularly the CSDs, as well as the CAL FIRE, to help understand the infrastructure planning that they're going through. The CSDs also meet, I believe, monthly or I think every month or every other month, and I participated in one or two of those meetings, and that was a good opportunity to discuss these with all of the CSD directors. So we do plan on collaborating much more closely than we have in the past with the CSDs on their infrastructure planning needs so that we can synchronize those and report to your board. Also, part of the annual resource summary report that we present to your board each year reports on the capacities of CSDs for water and sewer. So that's another venue for us to collaborate with CSDs and to report to your board.
Great, and so the plan is to continue for the infrastructure planning and financing team to meet regularly, and I really like the idea of the consolidated plan too, where we have an opportunity to look at all the needs throughout the entire county and set some priorities on those.
That's our recommendation to your board was that you direct continuation of this committee to meet on a as-needed basis at least a couple of times a year to go over the annual resource summary report and other infrastructure planning needs that come up.
Thank you.
So just trying to get through the rest of this real quickly, some of the policy highlights, new development will pay its full cost. Looked for ways in which the cost for deficiencies can be shared by communities based on the benefit received. And then provide for reimbursement to private parties who have paid more than their fair share of needed improvements. This has come up on occasion where a developer may be interested in improving the whole street, but needs a mechanism for reimbursement for that improvement. And to provide appropriate funding mechanisms based on infrastructure that's needed. This would be new infrastructure versus as opposed to deficiencies. And then consider debt financing only in very limited conditions. So those are the infrastructure policy highlights. And then attached to your report also were financing strategies that we presented to your board in late 2005. We've indicated those here. There are staff available to answer any questions you might have about those particular strategies as to the pros and cons of those. Other than that, that would conclude our report, and our recommendation is that your board consider the infrastructure policy that we've outlined and can give any direction that you feel appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Questions from the board? Comments from the board at this point? I have no request to speak from the public. Any other staff members have any at this point? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Gibson.
And I thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just emphasize the public education aspect of this. We've talked a bit about its importance as we talked about strategic growth principles and our need to move forward on those. This obviously is very closely tied up with all of that. But I think as we speak to communities and to their local elected boards or city councils, that we really need to emphasize the need for those communities to understand their infrastructure, understand the state of their infrastructure, understand the consequences of not keeping up with infrastructure needs, because I think there are clear quality of life issues. There are also very clear economic issues that are going to raise their head. I think for quite a long time, at all scales of local to national government, we've been sort of deferring the true cost of keeping up with those infrastructure needs. And so to the extent that the infrastructure team can craft those messages, come up with ways in which we can reach out to the public and their locally elected officials, I think we're going to find a better outcome here.
I think I do appreciate incorporating in the discussion the CSDs. As Supervisor Patterson mentioned, there's a number of them, and they don't all do business the same. And I found that I didn't realize I had so many CSDs in my district until I was attended all their different meetings. And there are a number of them, and they all have different functions. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important important to pursue this effort more aggressively, perhaps, than we have. As you mentioned, Mr. Stevenson, we started the process in 2006, I believe, looking specifically at ways to finance infrastructure deficiencies and resource deficiencies in the unincorporated area. You listed in your staff report a whole suite of financing mechanisms that are available to us, and I think the next thing we need to do, and perhaps that's looking at our resource management system report, is really identify and prioritize the infrastructure needs that we have and tie that to our land use and circulation element and our strategic growth ideas and set some priorities and look critically at what options are available to finance them, because so much of our lack of development in areas where it seems to make the most sense relative to strategic growth principles can't happen because of resource constraints and infrastructure constraints. And it actually, when you have these things in place, you build up a hostility, if you will, and we'll take South County and Napomo as an example, living with the impact of only one freeway interchange for 14,000 people. They don't want any more growth or development because they're living with that impact, and now we have water constraints down there as well. And so it creates long-lasting problems that are difficult to overcome, and I think it's really important that we pursue what you're recommending here, and that is identify what the needs are and get them in place as they're needed, not years after the fact where we build up this resentment and resistance and hostility among community members.
Okay, thank you. And I didn't get a chance to thank the other staff members that were here this morning, but we do greatly appreciate your efforts in trying to get through some very challenging times. So we thank you very much. Is there any, I have no request to speak on closed session. Mr. Horn?
Suggesting approximately 30 minutes.
So we'll be back right around 1 o'clock to report out of closed session. Thank you very much.